With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor is saying.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
Give them the middle.
Give them the swimmer.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million
shkeli. Aldi. Million rubli.
Tribe spoke.
Scheibe Tottenham.
Ship.
Hello everyone and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor Winners at War for Survivor Global. I'm your host Shannon Gust here to talk about the finale. This ridiculous season has come to an end. Tony Vlachos is a two-time Survivor winner. My brother texts that to me every morning and I hope he does continue to do that for a long time. It is a great time to be a Survivor fan. Also a bittersweet time. We don't really know what the future holds, but the present was a lot of fun. So to talk about this huge moment in Survivor history, I have RHAP's own Australian Survivor All-Star talking about Survivor, recapping the show for the first time since we've seen him on All-Stars, the great Nick Iadanza. Nick, thank you so much for being here.
Insert funny opening line that I didn't have time to think about because my toddler doesn't sleep.
That was great. You did so good with that. Nick, I also have a toddler. And that toddler is Survivor. How much does every parent hate me right now? Like, they don't even know. Like, I was telling you today about how much work I put into prepping for this podcast. I'm like, I only got like 5.5 hours sleep. And you're probably like, that is a dream.
I know. How dare you? What I would do for 5.5 hours sleep.
I'm dying, though. This is what I've chosen at this time not to have children.
I think someone needs to tell you that your toddler is 40 years old and needs to move out of the house.
Yeah, that's very, very true. My toddler has some inherent issues, but I love them all the same. I mean, this analogy isn't going anywhere. Nick, how are you doing? I've missed podcasting with you. Huge moment, but how's everything going?
Shannon, I'm doing great. Everything is really good over here because life is like not too – I know that there's a lot of stuff still going on around the world, but I'm very lucky to live in Adelaide, South Australia, because we have just been crossed the milestone of there being no cases, active cases in our state, and that's a huge relief for us. And I say it not to gloat, but I say that because there is hope, guys, that what we are doing is working. So if you're out there and you're listening to this and there's, you know, things are not going well in your city, your state, your country, we're doing okay. And I hope that you guys will get there soon. So life has been returning slowly to normal for me back at school. Paloma has been sleeping some nights and I am just absolutely razzed up about the ending of this season. And thanks for having me on. Yeah. I promise we will not go 30 hours or whatever was the last podcast that we did together.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can promise that. Like, okay, fine. It's not going to be as long as the deep dive, but
I can promise that.
In terms of like, okay, so it's officially 48 hours and 4 minutes since the finale started airing. In that time, I've watched the finale twice. I've watched 16 Jury Speaks videos.
Oh my God.
8 Ponderosas, 8, no, sorry, 10 Ponderosas, 8 reunion style videos where they talked about their game. I listened to the exit interviews on RHAP. I read Mike's exit interviews. I read Dalton's exit interviews. I listened to Know It Alls. What else is I probably more. There was a secret scene. I watched that secret scene. I don't know if there's content out there that I haven't consumed. Then I went to sleep. I dreamt about Survivor. I woke up and now here I am talking to you. So I have a lot of thoughts about it. It's a lot.
Shannon, I am concerned for you.
Me too. I actually am.
I've got to say, I finally tipped over into the concerned column from crazy Survivor fan, Shannon. I feel like I need to do some sort of intervention. And if there wasn't restrictions on the borders, I would be flying to you to put you in a sack and take you to some rehab center in the center of Australia. That's just no, there is no Survivor here.
Well, I wouldn't be doing any of this if you hadn't, given me the gig. So it is your fault. But last week I spoke to AK and he was like, it's true. But AK was like, oh, did you watch the Edge of Extinction Ponderosa videos from a year ago? I was like, actually, that's the one bit of Survivor content I didn't consume. He shamed me so hard. Yeah. And now I was like, well, I'm not coming onto this podcast without consuming every available piece of content on the finale. And because there hasn't been anything all season and it just got dumped. And the videos kept getting added. And then there was one from the fans. And I was like, stop, please. I haven't spoken to my family in so long.
Do you know when AK said that on the podcast, I was like, I'm gonna come in and be like, oh, did you see? And I was gonna drop some obscure video that doesn't exist. But at this point, based on what you've just said, I'm pretty sure that you'll be able to sniff out what's real and what's not.
Yeah, I mean, even just watching the finale, it was aired 10 a.m my time, watched it till 1, then I just sat with it, cried a little bit, not gonna lie. Peter from the other room was like, are you sobbing? It was so dramatic, but I was like, Survivor is over. This is the other side of this vacuum. Genuinely, I felt there was a ringing in my ears. I'd just been at a concert and I just sat there and I was on Twitter and then it was 4 o'clock and I had not eaten all day. And that was that day for me. So it's been a wild 48 hours since the finale aired.
And I love how you talk about it. I feel like. I just, it's so funny because when you're like, you gave me the gig, it's like, I'm like the friend in high school that got you to try drugs. And now you're just some cracked out weirdo. That's
okay. End the podcast. Just take the quote. You're some cracked out weirdo. You're like, this is not where I wanted it to go.
So I'm the guy who sent you on the slippery slope by giving you this microphone.
Yeah.
And then we cross in the street in the future and I've got my life together and you're just in the gutter and it's like, what have I done? But no, I'm so glad that you've done it all because I can't get through all that content. It's near impossible for me. And I don't think I want all that content, to be honest. I want people on Twitter or you to point out the best bits. And then I watched this morning the Ponderosa of them arriving, leaving the game and then arriving there and eating and all that. And I actually kind of was uplifted by that because I thought it was fun. But after about 30 minutes, I was like, okay, I'm good for now. I have reached a Survivor overload this year and I am ready to just talk about the finale and then move on. So let's get it.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can give that a lot of that to the listeners. I do recommend the Ponderosa stuff. It's not super relevant to what we're talking about, but it is actually just really fun. There's a video about Rob and Amber's relationship. It's the kind of thing you could probably get to within the next year, lest you go on a podcast in a year and someone shames you for not watching it. It's not super pertinent to right now, but it's still really good. And there's my favorite part in Ponderosa was Wendell rapping the Chris Noble's Ponderosa rap, which I love because he was, the full circle moments of this season where he's told Chris Noble he has no bars and now he's rapping his bars. And also then that song was in my head for the entirety of my research. So I'm going slowly, actually quite quickly insane.
Yeah, I did the voicemails with Rob on that episode and it's kind of wow, I'm back.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You come on the podcast whenever that rap is front and center.
Well, Shannon, just as we go along, just point out which pieces of content are worthwhile to go and check out, and I'll make a note, and I'm sure other people will make a note as well.
Yeah, I mean, I hope I remember. Last time I was lying in bed, and I had been, listening on two times to the exit interviews, and I could just, I remembered that I had said out loud, that's interesting, but I could not for the life of me remember about what. And it, was killing me, and that I did remember it. So I hope that I can pass out exactly where this stuff comes from and what we're looking at, or I've just, it's a blob in my head that is, unintelligible to anyone, which... we'll see. So anyway, let's get on with the podcast with that in mind. Let's start more broadly. We haven't spoken to you all season. I want to hear about your thoughts on the season as a whole. Let's start as broad as that.
Coming into this season, I was so pumped. Mm-hmm. Obviously, and the disclaimer I'll give is that after you play Survivor, the season of Survivor, the next season of Survivor that you watch is the one that you're kind of like the least interested in, I must say. And I don't know whether that's just because like the two of the worst seasons in the last 10 seasons have been once I've come back. So I came back and watched Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, which aired straight after I finished playing. And then this time I came back and watched Island of the Idols. So
yeah,
not great ringing endorsements, but like I would say that by the time Winners of War rolled around, I was like super keen. And obviously I was just desperate to see my favorites back and my friends. Like, you know, I'm friends with Adam and like, you know, just like all the people that I've known all over through the years. It's just so cool. So cool to see it back. And the season started off excellent. I've loved it. I must say I was disappointed by the boot order. Like, you know, you as much as the cast was pretty epic, you can't help but root for, in a season such steeped in such nostalgia, you can't hope but root for the people that you grew up watching when you were little. Your Ethans, Parvati's, Rob's, and even Amber. I didn't know that I was so interested in seeing Amber play until it was teased for me. So that was a bit of a pill to swallow. I thought, well, at least we'll get Sandra to the end. Like, kind of like what was great about Island of the Idols is that like you'd get that 5 seconds of her from the little spy box watching Tribal. I was like, we'll at least get, you know, little bits of her. And then when she left, I was disappointed. But I do think there was a bit of a lull in the middle. And then the finale, I would say, is without a doubt the best finale ever.
Hmm.
And I'm happy to say that. I know that's not a hot take, but I can't even think of something that comes close.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's really interesting. I mean, I kind of love the take on the finale because I want to be able to say it, and I feel like maybe it's a bit too soon, but, like, you're pushing me into that. Like, you push me into so many things, which is good. in terms of, like, the season, I feel like I've been, like, one of the biggest champions of it the whole time.
You have been like put like sometimes I question whether I'm like watching it properly when we talk and you say how good it is. I'm like, no, it is good, but like, should it be better in my mind? Like, maybe I'm not paying enough attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of things for me. Like, it's actually kind of funny because we spoke at the end of Island of the Idols for the finale recap then, and you were saying, like, the boot order cannot affect it. It will be good. And I was like, I'm kind of scared. And
yeah,
then you were like, even if the final three is Sarah, Ben, and Nick, it'll still be a good season. And I was like, that would be a terrible season. and we kind of ended up going the opposite way where it affected you more, the boot order. It didn't affect me because I just love this cast so much. And even though, yes, it was devastating losing all of those legends really early, for me, like, the characters I hadn't been as invested in, I grew to love so much more. Ben and Michelle's journey are two of my absolute favorite, and they probably would have been two of my bottom four coming into the season. And then also, I think I'm helped out by the fact that Tony's obviously my favorite player on the show, second favorite player of all time. Jeremy probably would have been my second favorite player on the season. I know that's a big call, but I just love Jeremy. So for them two to really dictate a lot of the merge and be two huge players in the merge, I think probably helped out for me as well in terms of the boot order. So I just had so much fun. Like, and now that it's had a good ending, like, there wasn't one week where I was like, ugh, I wasn't into it. Like, maybe I'm star for content. I'm kind of like the jurors who come in from the edge of extinction and they have nothing going on, so they've been more animated, which has been a theory. But, like, yes, we're in a pandemic. Yes, there's not a lot going on right now. There's not a lot of positives. And, like, every week I just loved it. Like, I really just loved it so much. And that almost more personal connection to it and more emotional connection to it, yes, does impact my view of it. It's an inherently subjective view that I just loved it. I loved it so much.
I don't know, is it not kosher to ask you about where it fits in your rankings,
it's
or
first.
Is that something it is first?
I think it's first. Like, I don't know, like, I don't know how it can't be to me. Like, yes, it
really
has its flaws. I mean, obviously, yes, I never want the edge of extinction, but the fact that it didn't end up deciding the game kind of worked out. The other twists, like fire, whatever, aren't my preference. Hiding an idol at five, not my preference. But, like, it just worked for me. Like, you can go back to any interaction with these people, just the premiere, just the conversations between these legends. The cast was just so out of this world that I could rewatch it again right now. I won't because I think you'll judge me. But, like, I just love the cast that much.
I don't think it can match Heroes Villains. I'm sorry, I don't think it can match Heroes Villains. And to me, I don't love it as much as I love Survivor China. and Pearl Islands. I would say it's like sitting around that like seven spot for me.
That seems like a pretty fair assessment. That's like, I know where Steven's been ranking it. And like, these things are so subjective. And as we know, rankings are very arbitrary and reductive. Like, this is just for me. Like, and maybe it's also where it fits.
Rank
like,
it you want.
I needed this season. That sounds so bad. And I'm really painting a picture of myself in this podcast. But like, with everything that's been going on, I really needed it. And
for sure.
And like, also where you are, like, you talk about how you maybe like seasons less when you come back from Survivor. Where you are in your life and what's going on with the world, like, that impacts it too. Like, I look back on seasons that made me a super fan or where I became addicted to RHAP and stuff like that. Like, they come up in my mind because of all the things going on around it. So I think that impacts it as well. But I loved it. I've said that so many times now. In terms of the finale, why to you was this the best finale ever?
I feel like every minute I was intrigued. Every minute there was something that there was light and shade. Like the Sarah Tony thing was, I didn't know that that was going to be so real. The way that Natalie came back and her kind of like picking up, you know, with Michelle kind of felt natural and fun to root for. A lot of people, I believe that the season may have left a bad taste in people's mouths if Ben went to the end, and I feel like he left in a way that was like, so I'm not a Ben hater. I'm not a Ben super fan. I just was like, yeah, Ben is Ben, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that. I loved the whole thing. I can even 100% understand why he did it. Like, and my wife, who is a super fan by osmosis because she hears me talking about it on the podcast, she is basically a casual with super fan knowledge, and she was crying at the Ben thing. Like, I loved that. The challenge with the ball and with rolling the little roller coaster thing that Stephen did and Kelly did, that's like one of my favorite challenges of all time. I loved the water slide thing. I was like, oh my God, Michelle, kick the puzzle. Like,
I was also like, kick it.
There are so many moments that like, and it's, I don't know. I've never been so like, you know, like you go into a finale and they're like, all right, these are the two people I'll be happy with winning. And these are like the six people, you know, there's always so many, like the four or five people that I'm desperately do not want to win. And like, I just didn't feel that. Like, I was just on this. I felt like I was watching a movie. It felt like a movie with different acts that started, culminated. It was its own little kind of contained story with Natalie coming back. Like, it was brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. I laughed. I cried. I cheered.
You had a panic attack? That's just me.
You should have seen me cheer when the Tony sandbag landed on that little podium thing. My wife was like, you need to relax, like, because the baby is going to wake up. And I was like, I don't give a fuck. But, yeah, so, just brilliant stuff.
Yeah, Peter came out of, like, where he was working in when I was, like, hyperventilating after the fire challenge and was like, if you're going to throw up, do it on the floor, not the couch.
Yeah, well, you tweet that.
And then someone was like, oh, dog or cat? I'm like, we don't have any pets. and then I laughed at that exchange for a long time.
Peter. Been through so much.
poor man. Again, all your fault. But like, I agree that this finale for me, like the fire moment, and it's been pointed out in terms of like the full circle moments, like Tony cheering when Sarah leaves and Kageyan to the crying here. I think that moment between Tony and Sarah is like an all-time great moment.
Yeah.
It's a culmination of like a three-season arc relationship. And so emotional, so human. I absolutely love that. For me, like you say, there was no one I really didn't want to win. I had stakes in this episode that made it hard for me. I was very, very scared, obviously, about the Edge person winning. And I hate rooting against Natalie. And I'm angry at the show for making me do that.
Yes,
And like, 100%. But the stakes actually made it better. Like, if I kind of wanted everyone to win, then it wouldn't have been so intense. Like, the stake behind, like, we're either going to get probably the best winner of all time or an Edge winner, which even being Natalie, who I am obsessed with, would crush me. So those stakes made it really interesting for me. We got very close to the wire, closer than I ever thought we would get. I kind of came into it thinking the Edge person will either take Tony out immediately or Tony will be able to take out the Edge person quite quickly, and then the other person will win. I did not see them being the final two. So it came down to the wire, which I felt was really interesting. But then having that be the success that I wanted was really fun. And then when I rewatched it, I could just kind of root for Natalie, be happy for her successes. And when I got to the final tribal council, just be really happy about the successes of these three players and the positivity of the jury, which comes out really, really clearly in the Ponderosa videos, but just to be happy that Michelle's superpowers do shine through and her social superpowers got her there and she deserves it. To be happy that Natalie won the Edge. A lot of people were saying maybe there should be a separate prize for the Edge. This season there was. It was $100,000. And to know that Tony played, like, again, I think probably we'll talk about it, the best game of all time. It was just three really clear success stories. And I think so much of the season has been around the narrative of, like, ironically, you don't have to win the game to be a winner. You have to, like, what is your success? What are you gaining from this? For Ben, that was a huge story. It was friends. It was social relationships. So there was so much of that, like, what do you own in your success? And it just ended on a very positive note for me.
Agreed. 100%. That obviously would be nice for Michelle to get votes, but
I would have loved Michelle to get a vote. Wendell, you could have thrown Michelle a bone.
All three of them have their own thing they can take away, and I wanted each person to take something away, and I don't know if I felt that for a very long time.
Yeah, it was so positive, and I think that's something I took away from the Jury Speaks videos, other than just, like, where is my mental health going? But also was, like, no one was voting against things. Like, people were very much voting for something. I know there's a lot of people mad at the people who voted for Natalie. Kind of find it crazy that people think Jeremy wouldn't vote for the godmother of his child.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, but, like, they were voting, like, if you look at the Jury Speaks videos, which we're going to talk about at length, it's like, well, I'm weighing up these things that I value. Just what do I value more? They're all positive things, but it was very much, like, not negative. It wasn't like, well, I won't vote for you because you did this thing. It was like, I will vote for you because you did this great thing, but I might vote for someone else more because they did an even greater thing. And that, like, positive attribution was really interesting to me.
Yeah, and it's like in any other season, what Natalie did would make her win. What Michelle did would make her win.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's okay. It should be, I hope that they can swallow that pill because it's like, it's the battle royale of all stars. Like, oh, sorry. Oh, my God. Of please, no.
They draw that into you, huh?
Don't
make me go back there.
It's of winners at war. So it feels like, you know, that's okay. That's okay that that didn't get you the win. Just know that it would have in any other season. And you're going up against, and I'll say it, in my opinion, the best player of all time in the best game of all time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't beat yourself up that you didn't win.
Yeah, and I want to talk about all those things. In terms of, like, some cons, I mean, I think no Denise confessional before her going, not great. You know, all the advantages, again, as I've said, like, I don't love when they hide an idol at Final Five. The fact that it all worked out for me makes it feel okay. Just, like, some little flaws there, but I really do think that it was unbelievable.
They're not going to not hide an idol.
Well, they shouldn't be doing that.
I know, but they're not going to. Like, that's just, like that's just, that would be, as a player, as someone who's played, knowing that an idol can go up to Final Five, you can't just not have an idol out there, because that's just like, that would be like when they spring something on you, like when they sprung the fire making in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. Like, that's not fair. Like, if you're not going to hide it, then you have to say that the no immunity idol's at the final, up to the finals, the last time you use it, the finals. So it's just like, it's just one of those, the fabric of the game that, like, is fine. Like,
it needs to be changed.
Yeah, look, if it's changed, great, but, like, it, you know, people love idol plays, and it's the finale. Like, they want as much bang for their buck as possible.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. We're definitely going to talk about all of that in regards to some of the stuff Jeff was saying in terms of gender and stuff. But yeah, I mean, I want to talk about the winning games. One other thing I wanted to mention just from the episode was, like, I really loved the send-offs they gave the players, considering they couldn't have a reunion. I thought that I loved them.
Perfect.
You know, they had a reunion on the island.
Yeah.
It was very emotional. I loved everything that they said. And then I loved the recorded videos. Like, I just love this cast, you know?
Yeah, it's really good. It is really good. I just wish Sandra was still there, because I just love Sandra so much.
Sandra was in Melbourne and Sydney. That's where her pre-jury trip was.
Was she really?
Yeah, imagine if I'd run into her on the street. I would have been like, Sandra, you got voted out, and I'm spoiled on it. That's so many emotions in 30 seconds.
Oh, I can give a quick 15-second story that's about that. When I came back from All Stars, you know, obviously just before the merge, I got back to Adelaide, and I quickly we whizzed off to Port Wollonga, which is a coastal town here in Adelaide. And I was like, we're just going to stay here for a week or so at a friend's shack, and we're just going to lay low and hang out. And we went to the bakery on the first day, and these four, in the middle of nowhere, these four super fans come running up going, Nick, you're supposed to be on All Stars.
No.
I was like, oh my God, are you serious?
That's hilarious. Because I think about that all the time, because Tyson, Jeremy, and Rob came to Australia on their pre-jury trip for Heroes Villains. And I always think, like, imagine running into them, what that would have been like. And for Sandra to say she was in Melbourne and Sydney, I'm like, I'm surprised we didn't catch up at the airport in that time. So the episode was amazing. So you've said that you think that Tony, best winning game of all time, best player of all time. I love that you're taking me to those extremes. I want to say it, and I'm going to say it too. Okay, I'll say it as well.
Because the only other person who I think could come, like, you know, every people like Kim, like she even said it in the episode, like someone like Kim and Rob, you know, they had these games, but it was against and you know, not to take away from their win, but like it's not, you're not comparing the same thing. You can't compare Rob playing against Nat 10 and Philip Shepherd. You can't compare that with Tony playing against Sophie and Parvati, you know, and it's just not the same. It's not the same. So while we're not diminishing their achievements, it's Tony's achievement needs to be put on a higher pedestal. If, and I believe the only thing that comes close is Sandra's win in Heroes Villains. But Sandra didn't win Heroes Villains by being in control and all these things. Now, if Parvati had won Heroes Villains, then I would be saying that's the only other game that I, in my mind, think is even somewhat analogous, except for maybe Sarah's in Game Changers. I do simply believe that an all-star season has to be, if you win an all-star season, sorry, if you win a returning season, you have to be given, your win needs to be given greater weight than playing against people who are either recruits or have never watched Survivor before, or they're doing it for the first time.
You can be a returnee and a recruit who's never watched Survivor before, to be fair. You can be both things at the same time.
Absolutely, right? And I know that better than anyone, but like it's not the same. So I don't know who we could possibly come close to saying, except if Parvati had won Heroes Villains. And she didn't, so it doesn't count.
Yeah. Well, for me, my favorite US winning game before what I thought was the best US winning game before the season was Tony and Kagayan. And I always know that's been a hot take, but I just feel like he just did so much more than anyone else. And even though he made mistakes, like he covered for them so comprehensively that made him the best in my mind. And he played way better this time. So it has to be, to me, the best US winning game. And I think the best winning game globally. Because it's okay, he contended against this enormous field, as you've said. And yeah, if we're going to say, okay, the thing we take away from Kim's game is that she was playing against like an easy field, how many more points are we giving when someone's playing against such a difficult field like this? But then even above that, I feel like he contended against more than any winner. Because he's contending against the Edge of Extinction as well, which benefits every player who's been voted out who isn't him. He got zero votes. And we saw the Edge of Extinction take down a lot of great players last year. Like, Victoria played a phenomenal game, and then she was gone. Because it's a really hard thing to contend with someone coming back and saying, you know, the jury loves them, and they have an idol, and all of these things. So for him to contend against the cast and the Edge of Extinction, to me, is crazy. I know some detractors are like, well, it can't be perfect because he was left out of a couple of votes, the Ben vote, Sandra vote. Yeah, no, this is what Twitter is saying. He had to make fire. And I'm like, do you understand that this man was in a final five with a final three, then the Edge came back, okay? Then he's contending against this huge, huge disadvantage against him. It's worse than the time he was extorted. If he has to earn his way there through fire and things like that, if it gets a little bit dicey, like, it's okay, because this is, like, the hardest terrain for anyone to go through, and for him to do it is, like, so impressive in and of itself.
And not receive a vote?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just no question. Like, you would have to you'd have to put forward a much more compelling argument than he was left out of, what, two votes? Is it two votes he was left out of? Two things he didn't? Yeah.
We'll talk about, like, the Ben
vote. So that's not enough.
But even Sarah in her jury speaks was like, look, I left Tony out of that Ben vote. It was pretty meaningless, to be honest. Like, I could have told him. I just didn't for no reason. Like, that kind of thing. Like, Tony didn't seem to care at all about it in his exit press or anything like that, because it was pretty meaningless. The other one was a one-person idol play that he wasn't a part of. Like, I didn't think coming into this difficult season that anyone could dominate it. I thought it was going to be like, I have power now, you have power, and everyone's kind of out of the loop, which was true for every person except Tony. He really controlled it almost like single-handedly. We'll talk about Sarah, but like, she was left out of the biggest vote of the season. Like, for me, the Sophie vote is the biggest vote of the season, and being hella blindsided on that compared to blindsiding on that is a chasm. That's not just like a little distinction. So Tony, for him, like, to be in such control of this season of all seasons that was so tricky, no one else knew what was going on, and he was the one who was always in the loop.
Yeah, 100%. And like, like then you maybe try and make the equation to Jeremy in Second Chances. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, what are your thoughts on that? I still think it was better. Like, I still think that he contended with more, like you said. So I don't think there's a question in my mind. And if you have a different opinion, that's okay, people.
Yes. Oh, definitely. But I think for Jeremy, like, I think he also played one of the best games ever. I think that is unbelievable. I think this cast is more difficult. I also think, like, again, Tony's dealing with the edge of extinction, like other things against him. I think Jeremy was more out of the loop when Steven was getting voted for / out twice. So I don't think that Tony ever had a move like that where he was like truly out of the loop. Okay, an idol got played against Sandra. That's unfortunate. Like, okay, Sarah decided to vote for Ben to his and her own detriment for no reason at the final five. Like, these are very, very small things. And again, even that final five vote isn't happening if Natalie not only doesn't come back from the edge, but has an idol, finds another idol, and then to go to fire, wins immunity. So that's what he's contending with, and he still makes it to the end. I actually think that as dicey as it might have got, and by like the lick of a flame, is he in the final three? I actually think him getting through this finale when Natalie came back with all of those weapons is maybe one of his most impressive moves.
Yeah, and even just like the way in which he kind of like approached that whole thing where he's like up all night and he's like always looking, and you know, it is so exhausting playing Survivor.
It's exhausting talking about Survivor, Nick.
Yeah, that like, that, you know, you're like, I know I should be up looking for an idol, but like, I am so tired. And like, to still do that and then still win challenges, you know, like, it's crazy.
That was like me last night. I was like, I know I need to watch This Jury Speaks, but I'm so tired. And then I watched it. Okay, that's my commitment to this.
Because you needed another hit.
Yeah, I think Tony is just like, you know, it's always been like that superhuman level of drive. Like, he's like an alien who can do it. And they had that secret scene of him last week where everyone was like, I'm at like a 1 or 2 energy level. And he was like, I'm at a 15. Like, he's built for this game.
Yeah, agreed.
I want to address something that I feel I need to, and I've kind of been asked about on Twitter. It's that, okay, so Tony Vlachos, my second favorite player of all time, wins Survivor. I'm clearly thrilled about it. How do I feel about it in terms of him being another male winner? 6 in a row. For anyone counting at home, which we all should be, it's important. Okay, I want to address it. So I've got 3 things on this. The first is, I love Tony. Like, I love Tony, and I'm always going to be excited that he won. Like, even if he'd won in a way that I didn't like the edge or just pure idling his way to the end, like Ben did in Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, like, still part of me would have been happy that Tony won. Like, for Tony. Less happy, but still happy. So as a fan, which I primarily am, I'm always going to have that emotion to it. And I feel like I'm entitled to it. That's the first.
Totally. Of course.
The second thing is, the game continues to elevate alpha play styles. We're going to talk about this when we talk about gender more broadly, but it is frustrating. It needs to change. It's always been my main concern with the structure of the game and how it impacts gender. I do need to see active format changes. I need to see active change. I definitely want to see not just a woman winning, but know that the game can value the different play styles that makes it easier for women in general to win. So I don't like just having a token woman win would not really help me. Like, I want to see active change that means like this game is dynamic again and multiple people can win it. But on that alpha game style thing, I actually think Tony's been validated a game style that I really value. Like, it still relied on alpha traits clearly. Like fire, he had an idol, he won immunity. Some of those immunities might have been clutch. We don't know how it would have gone. But the thing is, like, it beat the most alpha twist. Like, it beat Edge of Extinction. So for me, it's and he like was never voted for, right? And he controlled pretty much every vote. So For me, that actually was a win for strategic and social strategic values. Ironically, if Nat, who'd been a woman, who's a woman, had won, it actually would have then validated, we would have had like a, yay, I'll token woman winner, but it actually would have validated values, I think, that hurt women, which is like, okay, Nat's like the only woman to come back from the edge. Obviously, women can come back from the edge, but I still think it, like, it helps men more. So for him to come in and beat a more alpha game style, I actually think I'm actually really happy with that. I'm happy with not only Tony as a winner, but the way that he won. Obviously, Michelle would have been like an even better winner in terms of like really beta game style, which we've seen how much value it has and maybe should have been valued more by the jury, not against Tony's game, which was the best ever. But there's so much value to what she did. But I really, really love the way that, yes, Tony did take the alpha game style, but then he also brought in a lot of the social strategic element that I hope women can obviously use excellently to win, and kind of negated some other values that I think press down different play styles winning.
The hard part of podcasting these, Shannon, is that you've basically just said it all perfectly and I have nothing to add.
Okay. Well, I'm glad, and I hope that that doesn't get lost, because I know that it's like, I do feel like I am one of the biggest cheerleaders for like hopefully women on Survivor.
Oh my God. No one, no, you've consistently, ever since, even before you've had this platform, it's been consistently part of your like discussion points. So, no one's doubting that.
Yeah. I love Tony. And I love the way he won. And I'm like, I'm going to celebrate it. Okay. Like,
exactly.
I have a long off season to celebrate this.
Exactly.
Let's talk about Natalie, that person who, again, could have come and won in a way that I didn't value as much as I love her as a character. And again, would have been happy for her, but not super happy about the way that it happened. How do you think she did in this finale?
Oh, I love Natalie. Like, I loved her. I was so bummed when she didn't get to play in Game Changers. She was my winner pick for, I would say, every single minute until the minute before the premiere, and I shifted to Tyson. And I just love her so much. I love everything about it. I love that she doesn't take the game too seriously. I love that she's not super embedded in the fandom. I think that she does the right level of kind of like engaging, but the other part of where it's just like it is one element of her personality. I love that she's got this very interesting storyline with Nadia and this kind of first and last and mm-hmm. now it's been completely typified in this season. I think she's an absolute cracker, and she does so much for representation of people who aren't just the standard white people that we usually see play Survivor. She's got the whole strong women thing going. You can't pick a better Survivor/TV character than Natalie Anderson. I was rooting against her so Tony could win, which is crazy to me because if you had asked me who I liked better before the season started, I would have said Natalie. I think that it's a really good way to send off the Edge of Extinction.
Obviously
there was, you know, all the, you know, you were very vocal about it. We've got to get rid of the Edge of Extinction, you know, and then Jeff hears and says, you know, I don't know whether he heard you specifically and he's like, look, we get it. It's not coming back. Right. And will it maybe come back in the very distant future? Potentially. But for now, it's not coming back. And I'm happy for the people who like Edge of Extinction, as in the players who got something out of it. I think of someone like Aubrey and the last time it was on. You know, the players that got something out of it, it now also means something that the person who was the first person came back. They didn't win. It was a woman who dominated and made Edge of Extinction meaningful in some way, but it's never coming back again. Done. Mm-hmm. Jeff, what more could you possibly want out of the Edge of Extinction? I feel like it has scratched the itch for him. It's over. Like, he got the storytelling out of it. First person comes back, doesn't win, done.
Yeah. I mean, he's had both now, so now he's seen
exactly.
it all.
Exactly. Exactly. We have satisfied it, Jeff. Don't bring it back.
Yeah.
So just on Natalie specifically, like, I think she did such a great job when she found that idol. Like, I could feel the electricity pulsing through her body. I feel like she had two decisions which she would have been really grappling with. One of them was to not play the idol for Michelle,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was to not send herself into the fire.
Mm.
And I do not blame her for not doing that. Like, you have to be pretty, pretty risky to do something like that. Now, is it something that Chris did? Sure. Did she have to do it? Maybe. Like, would it have been the deciding factor? I don't think so. Like, if she has plays the idol on Michelle, right, and even if it is correct, does that earn her any more of those 8 votes that are going to get her to win in the end?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Chris making fire, like, he was given the advantage of actually having a much easier choice, because I think that what it was that Gavin and Julie were, like, clearly much worse at fire. So I think he had no choice, whereas I feel like for Natalie, she kind of felt like, you know, maybe she could have her cake and eat it too, because maybe Sarah and Michelle were as good and could go to fire and kind of do the work for her. I think if Sarah and Michelle had come to her and been like, I cannot start a flame, she would have been like, fine. And she would have had to do it herself and she might have won.
Yes.
And maybe she should have done that anyway. Considering, like, I think when you get voted out first, there's probably two ways you can look at it. Like, you can come back and be like, I'm playing with house money. Like, I shouldn't even be here and take all those risks. I think Natalie looked at it the opposite, where she put so much pressure on herself to come back that she played a little bit more conservatively. And I do think that that did hurt her.
You think that was the difference?
So I've gone back and forth on this. I went through Natalie's game coming back from, you know, from the Edge, and I went through it, like, literally move by move. And, like, I was kind of disappointed, because in writing it out, I'm like, Natalie, I think, made a lot of mistakes. Which is unfortunate, obviously, because I love Natalie. I was impressed with a few things, like obviously her coming back and finding the idol, and at final six when Sarah thinks so much that she doesn't have the idol, like that's needs her best move in this episode. But there are some wrong decisions in terms of like the fire making. I think she would have beaten him. Tony thinks she would have beaten him. And I think Tony has said in X interviews that he made it out like he was like amazing at fire so that she would be scared to take him on. And if she fell for that and was scared, then that probably is the wrong move, because if she could have gone to the end and beaten him, I do think she beat Sarah. We'll talk about the jury speaks. I have some interesting theories about how that could have gone. So I do think in terms of her taking it into her own hands, maybe she should have just to get Tony out. She needed badly to get Tony out. And even then, I think it would have been really close with Sarah, that having that resume point wouldn't have been a bad thing, I think, in an otherwise close race. So yeah, I think that if she makes the fire, she does end up winning. I also think it's like...
Yeah, but hold on. There's one thing about making the fire, and then the other one is the beating him. Like, putting yourself into fire, wow, what a ballsy move. But, like, you still have to win. Like, I can say this. I feel like I'm very good at making fire. I've done it in the challenge and won the challenge before. I can do it very easily around camp. I can do it at home. But I still would be like, hold on a second. I'm in the final three. Like,
yeah.
One of you guys can do it. Like, and I know she has a lot to prove. You've got a short amount of time. You have to make it up. But, like, I feel like I'm very good, and I wouldn't back I wouldn't feel the need to prove that.
Yeah. And I do totally get that. And I've heard from a lot of players that fire is often just luck. I think for Natalie, like apparently Rob was teaching everyone on the edge how to make fire so that they would like definitely be able to make fire. So he maybe saw it as like a bit of an insult that she wouldn't take that opportunity. I think that you have to back yourself coming back from the edge that you can do that, because you've had the value and the advantage of being in a place where no one can vote you out for practicing fire all day. Like you have to come back as like a surefire, forgive the pun, chance to win in that challenge. And from what it sounds like actually she would have been that. It sounds like she's a way better fire maker than Tony. We don't know how it would have gone, but I think if she'd backed herself, probably she would have done that. But I also see the other side, and the other side is if Sarah could win, and maybe Sarah can win, it doesn't seem like she's a definite person that Tony would beat, like Devins would have beat Gavin or Julie, then Nat probably still does win even without making the fire. So I see the rationale. I just think that like she had to get Tony out. Like she comes in with the objective, like Chris came in, the objective is to get to the end and get Devins out. He achieves that, he wins. Like, I think for Natalie, like, if she comes in and gets Tony out, like, she's painted Tony as the target. At that point, you got to shoot him. Like, the fact that she couldn't get him out, I think, was, like, poor on her jury resume. And also, he just would beat her. Like, his game just was valued more. So, yeah, I think if she makes the fire, she probably is the survivor winner. But I also see it from both sides. But I also think, like, at that point, you've been voted out. Like, just take the risk, you know?
Is there any part of it that is... That was Chris's blueprint. I need my own blueprint. Like, while it is a winning blueprint for someone that you're in the exact same position of, are you just doing the exact same thing that someone else did? I actually really valued her argument of no one else could break up this pair, right? I have come in and I have systematically destroyed this entire alliance. Denise, gone. Ben, gone. And now I'm putting the nail in the coffin of the last one in this group. And it's like, if I go to fire and I lose, I am sending both of them in to beat Michelle. The people who beat all of you are going to be there still. And the only way that I can push and make sure that this alliance, which controlled all of our fates, is gone, is to put them both up against each other. And I wonder if it was a matter of marketing, the way she pushed it. It's kind of like... Not to bring up Australian Survivor, skip ahead 30 seconds.
Oh, we're definitely spoiling all the seasons. So like,
okay, cool. When Sean is like, and like kind of like a little bit tossing up about like whether to take AK's jury question. It's the whole thing. It's just like, if you just come in and say, Jeff, there is no way I'm making that fire. I've got a very clear sense of what I need to do tonight, and it is systematically destroy that alliance. Like, and I'm going to rip it apart from the inside out, and I'm going to let them eat each other and so and their own. And you push it, and you push it, and people go like, "Wow, okay, here we go." If you go, "I thought about it. I don't back my ability with the fire." Like, that's not the right answer.
Right. Yeah, I think the problem was that it wasn't her objective to break up the alliance. Like, her objective was to take Tony out. She comes back onto the beach and she's like, everyone wants Tony out. Even when she puts Sarah to fire.
Yeah, but if you push it, you might be able to convince me.
She does do that at Final Tribal Council, but it's like at that point it was too late, because I think it was transparently not her objective. Like, when she puts them to fire, she's not like, I did it, Jeff. Here I am. And like, I'll be sitting with one of them because literally numerically I had to be sitting with at least one member of the Alliance when I came in, but I did as much as I could. She's saying, I'm rooting for Sarah. And I was like, ooh, don't, like, no one's asking you to bet on this. Like, don't put a horse in the race, because then when Sarah loses, you're like, wow, you didn't achieve your objective, a clearly stated objective. And maybe exactly, there's something else you could have done to achieve that objective. And then it starts getting people thinking of like, well, if you didn't get what you wanted, that makes you seem a little bit powerless.
That's right. That's why it needs to be like, I came in here, scooped up Michelle, found an idol, played this, look at them all, bam, 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 gone. Whichever one of you sits at the end, I can beat you because I'm proud of my huge resume. Sucked in, guys, eat your own. And then I will sit there at the end with Michelle, who helped make me, make it happen. And then if and I back myself that I can beat the other person. Yeah. It's why that dumb argument always wins of like, oh, I want to go against the best. Like, I hate that argument so much. And it's kind of like that. It's like, whoever's left over is no sweat to me. Like, I can, I feel like I'm proud of the game I've played on the edge and in the game, that it doesn't matter. Guys, you know, enjoy destroying each other.
Yeah, being visibly nervous about Tony winning Fire was not a good vibe for when he ends up winning Fire. But I think she probably thought of like the I broke apart the Alliance argument on day 39, where she didn't achieve her actual objective of getting Tony out and needed like a new. I like the pivot. I'm just saying that like it wasn't her immediate objective, so she couldn't verbalize it earlier. But like, I also think in terms of like breaking apart the Alliance, like, don't super buy it, because I don't feel like it was all her, you know? Like, I think she made a lot of mistakes in this episode. Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely not. But like, I think if you look at it even remotely, you know, closely at all from the jurist perspective, like, there's a lot wrong here. And like, when you're only playing 4 days, as Chris did to his credit, like, it really, and you're coming in with an advantage. Like, you're coming in with an idol, with jury information, all of the stuff. You're hyped up on peanut butter, as she was. You have to come in and play the perfect 4 days. And I just see like enough little holes where it fell apart. Like, even in the final six. So they've spoken about why they took out Denise instead of Sarah, sending them to Fire. Like, I don't agree with the decision. They thought they could have worked more with Sarah. Sarah told them she would have worked with them next. I don't think she would have. She said that she wasn't going to vote for Ben.
That was, to me, the biggest head scratcher of the whole night. Everything, well, obviously Ben pulling the pin on himself, but like, that is understandable. This I was unclear of. What did you say the reason was? So, they thought they could work with Sarah.
Yeah, and this is, I think, Sarah's best move in the entire episode, and not a great episode for her, was that she told them that she would vote with them next. And they believed it, and she did end up voting with them next, but I don't think she was telling the truth. She has said she was not going to vote for Ben until he gave her that permission. So they just think they can work with Sarah more. I'm thinking, vote with Denise. Like, they thought Denise was going to be more loyal to Ben and Tony, but that would have been after they had just voted for her. You know, if it had gone to a 2-2 tie, they would have obviously voted for Denise.
Yes.
So I would have definitely kept Denise in. I don't have a huge sense of like Denise's jury chances. I have a better sense maybe of Sarah versus Nat, and I think it would have been close. So I think she should have been gunning for Sarah a little bit earlier. So I don't like that decision at the final six. Then the final five comes along. It sounds like, you know, she could have gone for Sarah then. But again, like, she might have been swayed by a fake idol that Tony gave to Sarah or something like that. Like, I think she was getting played a little bit here. And I also think what was really bad was that she accidentally revealed the idol to Sarah in her buff and on her wrist, which made Michelle more vulnerable. Then it made a majority necessary, so they had to obviously vote with Sarah, and it eliminated the possibility of taking Sarah out. And then when she snookered herself into that position, she has to take the risk of playing the idol for Michelle, I think. Like, at that point, she's given herself implicit immunity by accident. And for her to then like screw up by accidentally revealing the idol, but then do the super conservative play of playing it on herself instead of protecting Michelle, when Michelle easily could have gone home. And I don't think she's the reason Michelle didn't go home. I think it's a Ben Sarah thing that's very, very separate from this. To then make that really conservative play that could have lost her Michelle, I think is the wrong move there as well. So where I'm seeing is like, she's getting a bit played, she's getting a bit flustered, and she's playing conservatively the whole time, where I think the jury would have respected a little bit more risk-taking. And I actually think it would have furthered her game at more often than it did if she had taken more risks.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're correct. But the whole thing about, they did get lucky that Ben wanted to kind of fall on his sword in some. They definitely got lucky. But by them, they don't have to, even she can still go with the argument of, I disrupted the Alliance, because the only person who can really debunk that is Ben and Sarah themselves. They're going to be like, oh, no, that's not what happened. We, you know, we blah, blah, blah. But it's like, that's because everyone's in their own little lens, I don't think that would have helped sway the jury back away from what Nat could have done if she just postured a bit more. Like, I feel like again, I go back to this idea of her marketing herself. Like, it is about posturing. She knows the jury better than anyone. She's lived with all of them. Like, I think that even the little mistakes that she made, whether they were little or big, everyone makes mistakes in the game of Survivor. It's just which ones we get to see or not. But
you shouldn't make mistakes in 4 days.
Well, it's not. It's really hard not to make mistakes. Like, even especially when you're a little bit out of touch with the vibe of the group. She hasn't played with any of these people. Like, she played with Michelle for 2 days.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah, you can hear about people's story of them, but it's very different when you actually get to meet them. So, and that's something that I've experienced in, like, when you're on a tribe and then you hear about people who've said who they were originally working with, and then you meet them at a swap or a merge or another swap, and you're like, oh, wow, that is actually very different. Like, she can be kind of thrown off kilter. Like, it takes people months to find, like, a whole month sometimes to find their feet in the game. Like, she has to do it in 4 days. Like, so I think that you can forgive the mistakes. What I can't forgive is the way in which she packaged them to everyone else. So I think we're arguing the same thing, just different elements of her mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, we've gotten a lot of like, well, does this make Chris's win look better? Because he did play the perfect game coming from Edge, and apparently it's like, it's not that easy. And in ways, yes, she is coming in with this group that obviously is really impressive and did some really impressive things to kind of counteract her at the final 6 and 5 and 4 as well. But I do think that there's probably more she could have done. Probably to me, it's like more of a general risk-taking behavior.
Yeah.
I still think it could have, like, look, if Sarah makes the fire, which she was 1 second from doing, like, I still think it could have been a winning game for Natalie, but I also think she could have taken more on her own hands to ensure that winning game. And, like, I think that what we've learned from Chris and Natalie is that coming back from the edge is a really, really good winning spot. Like, yes, Natalie doesn't end up winning and Chris ends up winning, but I still think, like, you're pretty much running downhill. You have a lot of tools at your disposal, especially when you're coming back with an idol. And Chris, like, you know, got those like that low hanging fruit, hit it out of the park. I'm now mixing analogies. And Natalie did fumble at times against some really difficult competition, which does obviously lose it for her. I think if a couple of decisions had gone a different way, it could have been very different. I think compared to Sarah, she's probably winning. I mean, this is a hot take because I've looked at all the Jury Speaks videos, but I think it could have been a tie. I really think we could have had a tie here.
Really?
Yes.
Explain.
Should I elaborate? So, I want to talk about the jury in general. So I said that they were pretty much like weighing up what they positively valued. And for Tony and Nat, it was very much a two-horse race. Like, as much as like we all love Michelle and we'll talk about how they felt about Michelle, but they loved the social game. They loved the fighting energy. They loved the crucial immunity wins. But the word follower was used a lot. I think the word goat was only used once by Yule, which was like she's seen as a bit of a goat. But the word follower was a lot. So she was kind of out of it. And even the people who were friends with her kind of felt like they had other games they respected more. It very much felt like a two-horse race between Natalie and Tony.
Was Parvati or anyone coming close to voting for Michelle?
Not Michelle, I don't think. Like, if anything, like they spoke about like how much they liked her, a lot of jurors did. Parvati was very much a two-horse race between Tony and Nat. Actually, Parvati was like the most confusing Jury Speaks because she's really, really unimpressed that Natalie was voted out first, and she is very critical of the game Natalie played early, that she played terribly in the first couple of days to be a very easy first boot, super cocky, throwing out names. She doesn't like that Nat has never made it through a vote while vulnerable. And then she says that she's so impressed with Tony because he's voted people off without pissing them off, which she's never been able to do. And then, like, the video ends, and then she voted for Nat. So I found like, her jury speech was, like, really confusing to me.
Don't question Parvati. She's the she can do no wrong.
Even when she
clearly that sounds quite strange. We just go with it because it's Parvati.
Yeah, I mean, I don't question her vote at all. Like, she hung out with Nat the whole time. Like, I don't begrudge any of these jurors. I just was, like, confused by the jury speech, which was, Tony's amazing. And she was, like, quite critical of Nat. Then she's like, so I'm pretty much tossing it up. And then she voted for Nat. So I thought that was really interesting. But so the thing we mainly saw was, like, Tony played the best game. People talking about how he might be the greatest of all time. His control was a huge thing. The other Lions, like Kim, were impressed that he made it that far without getting votes. Many were impressed that he betrayed people without them feeling burned. His innate like ability was brought up. A lot of people, especially on early Decal, loved that he had really changed from Kageyan and his persona was so different. So a lot of love for Tony. Nat got a lot of love as well. Like, if people were thinking the winners won't vote for an Edge person, I didn't see that at all in these Jury Speaks video. What I heard about was there are two parallel games. Tony played the best Survivor game, and Natalie played the best Edge game. What right. do I value more? So, and that's true. I mean, if the goal of the Edge is to give yourself the best shot to come back, Natalie, you know, like, you can quantify how much better she did than everyone else with how many tokens that she had. So I didn't see that at all. In fact, the only person, actually, this is a fun little game we're going to do. There was one person in the Jury Speaks videos that said, I would be uncomfortable with someone who played the game on the Edge the whole time winning. Who do you think that was?
Adam.
No.
Danny.
No.
Amber.
Yes. I got that way quicker than I thought. I could not believe that Amber, who'd been on the Edge for only one day fewer than Natalie, was the one who was, he seemed the most anti-Edge. There were a few people who felt uncomfortable that Natalie had been voted out, which I found really interesting. Like, Adam said that, Sophie said that, as I said, Parvati said that. Where, like, I don't really judge that as much. Like, if it had been an Australian Survivor thing and she'd just come back the next day, like you did, you know, like you did or Shawnee did or whatever, and then played the whole game really well, I feel like that wouldn't be very important to me. But other people were like, once your torch gets snuffed, you can't win.
The Amber thing, I think, is because she is so, like, her paradigm, like, she looks through Survivor through, like, Boston Rob, and it's just like, and I don't think that Boston Rob was ever going to vote for someone that came from the Edge, because
no, I don't think that sentiment usually came from Boston Rob. Like, I think Boston Rob definitely could have voted for Natalie. He just thought Tony played a better game than Natalie.
Right. Okay.
Amber seems, actually, this seems like a really individual thought from Amber, which I really love seeing, because, like, I love Amber.
Right.
And
we've love
seen
that.
So
love
tied to Rob.
I love the way that, like, she spoke about how, like, she's like this. You could get the sense that it's like she's like, the what Survivor means to me and my family and my history means more than me actually coming out here and playing. And in that sense, I love that she got to come out so we could see some of it. But I also love that she then left early and was able to actually say, like, I'm really here just to be a support for Rob. Like, and in that, I guess what I was trying to say, probably articulated poorly, was when you look at it through that lens, obviously, like, I'm not here to win. I wasn't here. I was here to support Rob. Like, the winner should be the person who plays, like, that more, that game, that traditional game of getting to the end, you know, playing a good game, and, like, all these fun machinations that, you know, like, oh, the Edge, like, it doesn't really mean much to her, even though she spent there. I feel like it meant more, like, transformatively for her personally than it did on a game level. So, like, I don't think she would reward it.
Yeah.
As in, like, it's not impressive to me that someone's come back from the Edge. That's, I guess, what I mean.
I completely agree with that, because I've always said, why would anyone who's been on the Edge say, I won't vote for someone who's played on the Edge, because otherwise, why are you there? Like, you're doing something
exactly.
for no reason. But for
that's
Amber,
not why she's there. Yeah,
yeah, she's there for Rob. She's there for personal reasons. So she can be like, look, it still makes sense that I'm here for me. I don't know if I would vote for me to win if I came back.
Yeah.
And Natalie is me, yeah. So I'm not going to vote for Natalie. Yeah. And you can see that kind of, like, those self-excuses coming in for a lot of the players. Like, in terms of, like, Adam and Sophie saying that they don't like that Natalie got voted out, they can justify it in themselves. Look, if I got back in, I wasn't a pre-merge brute. I played most of this game.
Yeah.
2 days off, I've come back, and, I mean, they do say they don't like torch snuffing, but it's like she was also first boot. So that seems to be more of the thing. I also believe them to be more purists, obviously. But I think that they can kind of say, well, I don't know if I vote for Natalie because it wasn't super disqualifying, but I don't know if I would because she was, like, the first boot. I wasn't that, so it still makes sense that I'm here. Like, I could come back and win. I played most of this game.
Yeah.
So that seemed to be much more of the thing, which was interesting to me. Like, I don't know how, like, if someone who has been voted out and then come back, how do you take that?
I guess in my experience, the first time, like, it wasn't so much like, damn, I've got this mark against my name that is going to prevent me from winning. I thought it's like, I'm going to be prevented from winning because, like, no one here thinks about the game the way that I think. Like, that was the reason that people wouldn't have voted for me if I made it to the end. Like, sure, I might have been able to get some votes, or if I, you know, who knows what would have happened in the stretch there. But, like, from the day that I was voted out, if everyone had to vote for a winner, I wouldn't have got any votes. Like, because no one viewed the game the same way as I did. So I think that trumped the fact that I had already been voted out. And that whole thing about the fact that I was voted out and came back never came up, even in Jury Villa, even in the months after the game. That only came up once the fans started talking about it after the airing of the episode. And I think that maybe speaks to the kind of people that I was playing with, that they're not Survivor purists. So I don't think they would have cared about that. And what it tells me, and I've always thought about the Edge, is that, like, personal feelings about someone trump the game mechanic of the Edge of Extinction, which is why I believe that Chris won, because people didn't like me, not because I was coming back and ruining the sanctity of Survivor and the torch snuffing, even though my torch wasn't snuffed. It was more just because they just didn't like me. So, of course, they're going to vote for Chris if they like him, you know? Like,
yeah.
If they like him and don't like Julie or Gavin, then he's going to get their vote. And I've always viewed Survivor through that lens. And then playing the first time reinforced that. And playing the second time, like, really reinforced that for me.
Yeah. So your thing was, I'm not going to lose. Like, it's not that I can't win at the end because I got voted out. Like, I got voted out because I can't win at the end. You know, like, I got voted out. Because
yes.
I'm not vibing with these people, which is why yes. I wouldn't win at the end. Not yes. like, well, this mark against me would actively make me lose. Like, it was much yes. more, like, connected than that. Yeah, yes. I totally get that. And I think that in terms of, like, Natalie's social game, we heard stuff from Rob at the jury about how it was bad. You know, we heard Danny has said on Instagram Live that, like, Natalie was fighting with people. Like, honestly, in the jury speech, she got a lot of love. Like, there was nothing about any bad social relationships. But there was a lot of, like, There was, besides Amber, not a question of the edge. Like, not a question of, can I vote for someone who didn't play the game? It was all, she got voted out. There was a lot of, she did play the game. Like, the edge now has fire tokens. That makes it the game. It's completely different from 38. There was a bit of that. So I find it interesting the way the jury is justified to themselves. But there was a lot of, I can't judge the twist. Like, these are the parameters that were set for me.
Exactly.
Kim said that, Sophie said that, and Sophie even said, best edge game ever, best game ever. It's apples and oranges. You can't compare it. And you just have to decide, do you like apples more or do you like oranges more? And I think where it went really well for Tony was that people probably weighted the game more than the edge and probably felt he played even that much of a better Survivor game than she played an edge game and that it was that good. So I think that that's what did it for Tony. It wasn't any of like, I can't vote for the edge. Like, go watch, like, people can go watch 16 Jury Speaks videos. Like, it's not there. That's really interesting to me.
If you had to, because I know there are people listening to this who do want to go watch them, but probably not going to watch them all, who are the two Jury Speaks videos that they should go check out the most?
Honestly, they blurred into each other so much. I thought Sophie was great, and I thought it was great to hear from Sophie considering she was so sick at that final tribal council that we couldn't hear from her at all. So I thought that was really interesting because that really painted that apples-orange dichotomy that a lot of people had that was like, I think Nick was like, Tony and Nat are the two best players of all time, and I'm just choosing basically between these two very different but like mammoth games that they both played. And clearly most people chose Tony, and I think that probably speaks to the weighting and also just like the strength of his game. So Sophie is one that I would say. Who else was really good? I thought that, you know, for people who were like mad at Tyson, you can just probably go look at, he was just like, I'm just voting for Natalie because I like her the most. Like, that's also so valid.
That's it.
Yeah.
And since I've played, I have never, ever begrudged anyone for who they vote for. You can vote for whoever the hell you want to, and that's valid because you get to decide. It's like the one thing in Survivor that you get to decide that is your own thing. So much of the game, and if you haven't played, you maybe don't realize this, so much is like you're told to, you know, like you can't go here, you have to do – there are so many rules and like, you know, so many things that would never – come across to the audience of like, you know, like parameters around it, the challenges and parameters around living conditions and parameters around the way you talk in the interview. You know, there's so much stuff that it's just like, my vote is my vote and I will do whatever the hell I want with my vote. It's one of the reasons why I like Shawnee and I always got along. It's just like my vote and who I vote for is sacred to me. And you can't tell me whether you're like, I'm talking about other players. You can't tell me who to vote for. I will vote for whoever I want, and you will not bully me into voting for who I don't want to vote for. And I feel like that is crystallized the most in the final tribal council. You can vote for anyone, and it is the correct answer for you. That's it. We don't like it because we have our own views, and that's why the jury works so well, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I didn't blame any of the jurors for voting for Chris at the time. I was like, how would they not vote for Chris? Some of them hadn't even met the other finalists, which was true. Yeah, Danny hadn't met Tony, but she loved Tony. Like in her jury villa, she was like, I love Tony. He's so funny. Tribal council. I've never met the guy. She ends up voting for him, obviously over Nat, who she just spent over a month with.
That's funny.
Which was really interesting. So there's some really interesting stuff there. Adam is great. Kim is great. Honestly, like, you have time. I honestly, like, I recommend the Jury Speaks videos. You can probably speed up the timing as well to get through it. But they were all really, really interesting. But it definitely came down to this, like, this two-horse race. But I did love that it was just a lot of positivity. And it was a lot of like, it wasn't a lot of like, there was none of that bitterness at all. Which, you know, again, if people feel bitter, like that is to a degree their prerogative. If you've made people feel that way, that
absolutely
sometimes or often is on the players. But I do also like the positivity and the fact that the season felt like such a celebration where it started with champagne toast, you know, and for the players to really end it that way in the tribal council, as well as like in their jury speaks videos, it just felt kind of like we're honoring something here. We're honoring a franchise. We're honoring like an epic season. We want to honor like the winner of something we really value. And like, it all came from that like really good place for everyone in the jury speaks videos.
And like, again, as someone who's played, like it sucks when you leave a season and you don't have like positive feelings, or not that I didn't, but like there are people that don't. And there are some people I didn't have positive feelings to in either version. But it's just like, it is like they are, the jury in this was lucky. They had three excellent options to choose from. They had one that was more excellent than the other two excellent options. Like, that's a rare thing in Survivor. It's very rare in Australian Survivor. I don't think it is. I'll be honest. I don't think that's ever been a thing in Australian Survivor, like where you have two fantastic options. Like, you have a good option and then maybe a slightly less good option, or an excellent option and a bad option. Like, you know, like, Pia and Baden might be like a close one, or, you know, but I can't think of too many great, you know, I just feel like they were spoiled for choice, and that's such a great place to be and a great way to end season 40.
Yeah. And I also feel like I was asked, like, is this the best final three of all time? And since we're being hyperbolic, like, probably, right? I mean, heroes versus villains. Like, in terms of like Russell, you know, like he played.
Oh my God. I loved having Russell at the end.
Right.
Like,
but the thing is, like, I don't think people felt as positively about his game as they did zero vote finalist Michelle. Like, Russell probably does lose to maybe anyone at the merge, whereas like Michelle probably beats a lot of other people.
Here's my thing with Russell haters, right? And like, don't worry, I'm a Russell hater, right? nowadays, because
of what he says about our country.
the people, I feel like the Russell hate continuously evolved over time. You can't say, and I tweeted this out when he was in the first episode of Australian Survivor season.
Two episodes.
Three. Sorry. Yeah, sorry. No, but in the beginning of the first episode, and no, when he found the idol, and I said, you know, like, I don't care who you are, whether you hate Russell, like Russell, whatever, you can't help but feel that teeny little buzz that you felt when he was on our TVs back in season 19, finding idols and stuff. Like, I feel like over the time that the narrative shifts and it colors the way we felt about him at the time, everyone loved what he brought to the game if they hated him. You can hate him but love what he brought to the game, right?
Yeah.
And that's why I think that him, Parvati and Sandra will forever be the best final three that has ever existed, because they each brought something so amazing that was like, whether you hated him, loved him, you cannot deny that was electrifying television. And that's why I don't think these three have a patch on them, even though I love two of them and also really enjoy Michelle.
But in terms of character, I agree with you in terms of like from a viewer perspective, but just in terms of like, the jurors voting for things, like, they were never going to vote for Russell over
of
anyone.
Course, yeah. Whereas, oh, sorry, like, sorry. When you said best, I thought you meant TV version.
Well,
sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of all, again, this stuff is pretty subjective and arbitrary and reductive, but, like, in terms of the jurors voting for the final three, like, they were positive about Michelle. There was a lot of great stuff that they loved in her game. I thought it was funny, like, in terms of, like, disrespect as a follower, like, someone who was really on that was Danny. She was like, well, you didn't really have control. You just, like, won immunities when you needed them. I'm like, wasn't that your exact winning game? Like, of all people to be, like, so anti it. I was like, she really followed in your mold.
She's got these, like, odd, like, these really
go watch,
like,
Danny's jury speaks.
These really oddball takes I'm living for. I wish we got to see more.
Danny's kind of crazy. Like, I think it's, like, an undersold story of the show.
I thought that when I watched the thing of her, like, and, like, the way her mum was describing her in the Ponderosa thing, I was like, I think there's more to Danny that we didn't quite actually get, which is why the show maybe, like, in casting was so willing to have her.
Yeah, there's more that we didn't get to see. So, I mean, I think we're going to see it because she feels, like, ready to spill the tea on Instagram and stuff. So, like, it's probably out there if you want it. But, yeah, Danny's jury speaks is really interesting. So I think that there was value in, obviously, all three. Obviously, the jury felt that way, which is cool as well. I want to talk about Nat versus Sarah, which I put a lot of thought into. I was texting my brother about it, like, 2 a.m.
Is this under the condition that Sarah wins the fire?
I don't know. Put it in a vacuum and then we can talk about that after. Because
okay.
So I think it would have come down to whether they saw
Sarah. One more question. One more question. Is this with Tony not there, obviously?
Yeah. So Tony loses a fire against Nat or Sarah. I haven't worked out who yet. And I think that could have been crucial because I think it would have been close. I think it would have come down to whether
Nat
Sarah's game was seen as good as Nat's edge game. You know, because that was the whole point, was like Nat played a great game on the edge and that's enough. But Tony played a better Survivor game and that's better. Could they say the same for Sarah? I'm not 100% sure.
Well, Adam was going on about how great she was, which is why they needed to get rid of her. So it must have been out there in the ether.
So this is the voice I think Sarah's going to get. Adam, Sophie, Kim, Ben, Tony, and Denise. Definitely, I think, 6 votes sewn up there. We saw Kim and Sarah's relationship in some secret scenes. I think she's got that 6. I think Natalie's definitely got Jeremy, Parvati, Ethan, Tyson, which she did get. Rob has basically said if she took out Tony, his vote was hers. He seemed impressed with her edge game, but I think he wanted her to go that extra mile.
Yeah, but hold on. The proviso there is if she took him out.
That's true, but I think that if she'd been able to say, like, I think she could have packaged it better had Sarah taken out Tony to be like, I didn't need to risk myself. I want immunity, which I earned and fought really hard for. And I knew that Sarah would be able to get it done, so I didn't even have to risk myself.
Yeah, but we see that, like, Nat is, my major critique has been this, I think she had a great finale, better than you view it as, but I feel like the major critique is the way she packages it. And Sarah is good at packaging things.
But according to Sarah, Rob really doesn't like her and was like bad-mouthing her all over the edge. So I actually don't know.
Oh, wait, what? Where did that come from?
Like one of the many exit interviews I consumed in the last 48 hours, actually multiple. Like, she felt like a lot of the gender stuff she felt was coming from Rob.
Really?
And he was bad mouthing her. She's like, I played 2 days with you. Why are you so against me? So I actually don't know if Rob was ever voting for Sarah.
Oh my God. Like, why have you not mentioned this earlier? This is,
I've got so much information in my brain, Nick, that I'm trying to but not all at once. All right. So then Nat has those 4, and I think Rob and Danny, I think, is 6. I think at that point, I think Danny just loved Tony. She's like, he's hilarious. I think even Crazy Danny, who is something that we're now contending with, probably goes with Nat, who she spent the last month with on the edge. Here are my question marks. So Nick, who I think called Natalie the second best player of all time, probably goes to Nat. Wendell also seemed pretty close between Tony and Nat and was like, whoever speaks better will get it. So I think he probably goes to Nat. Yule, was very much like Tony and Sarah running the game. So I think he goes to Sarah. And then Amber, again, I'm like a question mark on her. But doing the math on that, it means that the votes, again, fires a vacuum and it's close enough and the speeches would have been close enough. At this point, anything could have happened. But it very possibly could have been if Amber votes for Nat, 9-7. And if Amber votes for Sarah, a tie, 8-8, Michelle breaks the tie and Nat wins. That would have been a crazy finale.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot.
Okay, a lot to digest there.
Yeah.
Can I add one more wrinkle in it?
Yes.
That you're assuming that by removing Tony, the votes would either then go to Sarah or Nat. What about by removing Tony, there are people who then want to vote for Michelle?
So the reason I don't think that would have happened is because Michelle has said that she did have friends on the jury, probably like your Nicks and your Wendells, who would have voted for her, but they felt it was like too close between Nat and Tony and didn't want it to like basically get a winner they didn't want by voting for Michelle to get second place. Like, they thought maybe Nat would have had enough votes to beat Tony and they just wanted to like vote for the winner. And how much more would they have wanted to do that when it literally could have been a tie? Like, how bad would you feel if the person you want to win actively loses by one vote and you've just given a vote to Michelle for no reason? So I think like even more so would they have been like, I love you, Michelle, but I just can't.
Okay, I get that. Thank you.
So in this other world,
really
is there a tie? Yeah.
You really covered all
bases. This is my 2 a.m. thoughts, and it was pretty comprehensive, I think. So I think that would have been really interesting. And I'm very, very fascinated by the jury mentality in general towards the edge from players who came into the game not really liking the edge, who've justified it to themselves in terms of like, wow, the edge really is hard. Fire tokens really did change the game. Playing the best edge game is impressive enough to win. Like, that is night and day from where they were preseason. And we see that evolution. And I still think the edge player definitely could have won, but just not against, as we're calling, the best winning game of all time that multiple jurors called like the greatest of all time as well.
What about the thing about gender? And I don't know whether you want to kind of segue into that now, but the idea that do you know, like, you know, it's obviously something that Sarah believes in. And I was enthralled by what she was saying about how, what people said about her after she won, about how, you know, if a girl does it, she's a bitch and all that kind of stuff. Like, I loved, that's what she said, right? Yeah. I'm not
yeah,
just
that's
making
a Taylor Swift song as well. So.
Okay. So I'm sure Sarah is a very savvy person. I'm sure that she 95% believes that and 5% realizes that it's a good platform should she be going up against Tony in the final three, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if that is what's kind of building her some momentum going into the final, but she's sitting in an all-female final three, it kind of it kind of reduces maybe that argument for her. It maybe she's able to use it to kind of say, like, hey, if you're thinking that, like, oh, Tony's not here, I'm not just automatically going to vote for Sarah, I'm going to vote for one of the others. No, hey, gender bias, it could, you know, I was running it with him, so it could have helped. But I do think that maybe some of the air is let out of that balloon when you are sitting there in an all-female final three, which would have been so cool to see.
But I think that when she's giving that argument at the final six, which I do think is absolutely a move, and I think she's confirmed as much, I think at that point she is expecting to sit there with Tony and Ben.
Yes, yes.
So, you know, but and she's only giving that argument to try and beat Tony. So that's
yes,
like what
exactly.
But she might not need it as much against Natalie and Michelle. Now, another really interesting thing in my tie theory is that Natalie 100% thinks she would have beaten Sarah, and Sarah 100% thinks she would have beaten Natalie, which I'm finding from the Exit Press, which I'm like, ooh, this is interesting. I kind of wish that we could have had a reunion so we could have had this enormous jury raise their hands and like quickly counted. But they should have just done it on the Zoom because I find it really interesting and they both think that. So maybe, I think probably both of them weren't sizing each other up as jury threats as much as they should have. Like she's probably thinking they're going to get rid of Natalie anyway. So it's not like Sarah's thinking that. So it's not as much on her mind. Natalie didn't seem very worried about Sarah at all. They probably should have been somewhat worried about each other in terms of the jury. But I think both of them were playing to take out Tony or to beat Tony in some way rather than worrying about each other.
Yeah. I don't even want to like put it out into the universe in case me, it escaping my lips makes it for some reason happen. But if Tony wasn't in the final three, I would have loved to have kind of seen how it would have all worked out. But I don't want to say that too loud because I don't want for some reason some magic genie to hear me and we go back in time and Tony doesn't win.
Yeah, that magic genie has caused some chaos recently. So, okay, now that we've segued, let's go to the gender thing because I do have a category titled gender in my notes because this was a lot, you know, and like the gender conversation has come up quite a few times in the last couple of seasons, few seasons of Survivor since Angelina kind of put it out into the ether. So as a move, as I've said, I really like this from Sarah. Like she hears that Tony is the biggest jury threat when Nat comes back. She's probably thinking like at this point, it's really hard to take out Tony. We can talk about whether she should have at least attempted that. But instead she's like, all right, well, I'll try and elevate my game above Tony because that's still something that I can do. And like, I think it could have maybe helped. Like it seems to certainly weigh on Ben, like in terms of him like leaving the next round, I think there was like a lot of male guilt there. Right. So as a move, I like it.
For sure. Absolutely. Do you mean on Sarah's behalf?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, of course. Sarah is a really, really good Survivor player. And I feel like she's become more and more dynamic on screen as she's maybe played more and more days. Like, and I love that now. Like I wasn't super keen to see her play Game Changers. And then she played Game Changers and she proved that she had this really strong strategic acumen. And now, and obviously the social thing was there, but the show didn't include it as much. And I like that this season we were able to maybe see some of that. And I wonder if it's because they were able to kind of like make it look like her and Tony were doing the strategic legwork so that they could free up a little bit more of her kind of discussions to be around her social game. So I've loved that. And I think that this discussion was definitely part of that social game.
Yeah. My issue in it is that she also clearly believes it. So there's two parts of that. Like the first part is that like she is inherently right, you know, because like gender and the, like affects the way we perceive and interact with each other in like in every interaction. So it creeps into every single thing. So no dynamic is isolated from that. Like, yeah, the way the jury perceives her, the way other players perceive her, the way they perceive her and Tony, like is definitely biased by that in intangible ways that can't even be quantified. So like that is completely true. The other part of that is that I do think Tony played a way better game than Sarah. Like, I don't think that this is a fully a gender thing. I think there maybe are other better examples, but I think in this game, like, there's so much tangible evidence that what he was doing was pretty individual. Even if they did a lot together, like, as I've said, the chasm of him blindsiding her at the Sophie vote, the biggest move of the season, which she gets blindsided, is like a Scott Pollard thing for me, that Aubrey made that move and Michelle got blindsided. That always really stuck out to me, and it sticks out here. You know, like, he obviously has the resume points, the immunities, the idol. And I even feel like in this episode, she's kind of trying to push that narrative of, like, people, we're equal. People see it as his being more important because his is the flashy strategy, but I'm like the social person with the reads. And that's why she's trying to be like, oh, Tony, your vote split plan isn't necessary. I've read this. I've done my superpower, and that is as good or better than your superpower. But it's like, also, Tony has a really good social game and really good reads, maybe even better than Sarah. So he's like in those categories too. And I think by her trying to like push that, it kind of actually showed the disparity in their games and how like that dichotomy that she's trying to paint isn't actually true. She does have parts of that, but Tony has all of that, probably to a greater level.
Yes, I know. And like, you know, we left Game Changers with going, oh my God, everyone said that she was their number one. And it's like, but Tony has that too here. Like,
there was, I think, had more here.
Yeah, I think that one of the underreported relationships of the season was Nick and Tony.
Mm.
I think that obviously we saw a lot about Tony and Jeremy. And I think that, like, I would feel that, like, maybe Michelle felt maybe she was closer to Tony than Sarah. I don't know. I'm not sure. But, like, I do feel like Tony had these things as well, but he also had other things. So, yeah.
Yeah. And when she did have Sophie, which was a close relationship, like, he dealt with that. You know, she like made that work in a huge move. I also think, like, in terms of like them going to the end together, it's an opposite move because I think Tony would have easily won. So like she's taking a winner to the end, he's taking a loser to the end. That's an opposite move. Like, there's a lot of disparity between their games for me, even if I do think Sarah played a really great game that kind of fell apart, I think, in a bit of a panic here at the final six, because she was, I think, making wrong decisions. I think that she could have maybe gone for Tony at points. I think the Ben move, we'll talk about the Ben move, was the complete wrong move for her. So I think at that point she maybe got a little bit panicked. I think she played a great game. I just think that it's not a gender thing to say that Tony played the best game of all time. Like, it was better because it was the best game of all time.
I have always thought since Cagayan that Sarah's issue, if she has any, like the issue, the thing that maybe she in the game of Survivor always undo so many people is an overconfidence in her ability. And Tony hosed her in Cagayan because I think she just couldn't fathom that she didn't have everything on lock. And then I think that perhaps why she did well, and this might be me being super reductive and like reading into it, but like she maybe going into Game Changers, maybe she knew that she needed to kind of fix that a little bit, but then by the time the season ends and the amazing position she put herself in and how great she was, that then that wasn't an issue anymore. And that, like, I just feel like there were times throughout the season where like she was just like, no, this is going to happen and this is right and I'm right, and like, and I don't know if Tony always thinks that. I think that Tony is always seems a little bit more like, yeah, but what if, or what if, okay, if this doesn't work for me, I've got this. And I think that he maybe questions himself a little bit more than she does. And I think is that what we saw with the final six vote about having the idol.
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't have been clearer than the final six vote. Like, that was.
But do you agree with that, though? Do you agree with that as in one of her, if you had to, she's got many, 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 many positives. And if we're being critical here, which is unfortunately, sorry, Sarah, what we kind of have to do, would we say that that is one of them?
Yeah, I mean, I could see it. I think maybe the hugest moment of that was the final six. I think that's like the starkest example, unless I'm just not remembering things. But like, I also remember her talking to Tony in that conversation earlier when they're fighting like Tyson or Kim, in the episode where Tyson ends up going because Jeremy leaves the tribal council, and like he is able to step back much quicker than she's like, it has to be Kim, it has to be Kim.
Yes,
and it's like maybe
yes.
It's that like stubbornness on her own ideas or like her own sense of convictions, which can be good, but also can be really wrong. Like at the final six year, it was so wrong. And it was really cocky. And then she was talking about herself in the third person. And I was like, oof, this is so bad. Because the right move was clearly to split. Like, there was, like, at least Ben had his own agenda of, like, he wanted a social thing to the point where he, like, leaves the game because of it in the next round. But, like, for Sarah, she was just, like, completely wrong on her read. She flushed two of her allies' idols because of it. Like, it was just so wrong. So yeah, that was a tough one. And maybe it's just, again, like, how much is it her as a player and her flaws as a player, and how much is it that panic? Like, I see part of that. I think maybe it was amplified here, because when Natalie's coming back and saying, well, what do you have to cling to? Tony's going to win. And she's like, oh my God, well, no, I'm the social player with the good reads. I have to be that person, because if I'm wrong about this and Tony's right, then he's got everything and I've got nothing. And then what is this? So I think a bit of it might've been that.
To do that annoying thing, to relate it back to my own experiences, like, I would rather play with, if I was put out there, I would rather play with Tony than with Sarah, because I feel like Tony, even if he thinks his idea is right, I feel like he'd be like, Nick, please come, you know, blah, blah, and he would like, you know, like, I've got it, let me explain. And then like, he would like do this whole thing where he like, you know, but if we do this and blah, blah, and it would be like a lot more like, I think I'm right. Like, please listen as to why I'm right. Whereas I feel like Sarah's like, no, this is right. Like, and trust me, you'll see that we're right. Like, and it feels, it's one of the reasons I didn't want to, and obviously this is an extreme example, didn't want to work with Henry as opposed to working with someone like, even forget Harry and Shawnee, even someone like Abby. Like, Abby would be more willing to be like, okay, look, I don't think you're right, but if you are, this is maybe why. And if I'm right, then this is maybe why. Whereas, you know, I feel like it was a bit more steamrolly with, it definitely was a lot more steamrolly with Henry. And is that maybe the difference?
Well, Tony even says that. Tony's like, when he comes back from that tribal council, when their idols have been flushed. And like, honestly, for Sarah, like, there by the grace of God goes her. Like, it is on her that she has, like, okay, no, that's not true. There by the grace of Sarah. Like, she has made that relationship with Natalie and Michelle to the point where they think that she could work with them in the future when she wasn't planning on doing it. She saves herself in that. And I actually do give that credit. So I'm actually not going to give credit to God there. But at the same time, you know, she flushes two of her idol's allies because of a wrong read. Like, it is the wrong thing, because if they go to the final five, then Natalie can't find another idol. I have to think, maybe if Natalie just plays her own idol, they rehide one. That actually could be true. But even then, Tony's giving his idol to Sarah at the final five. Like, then they're just steamrolling as a final three that has three immunities. So definitely, you know, don't flush people you're working with allies incorrectly. Like, you know, there could have been an argument for, okay, get with Denise. I mean, why wasn't Denise doing this? We didn't hear from Denise. But, like, get with Denise and Natalie and Michelle and target Tony. Like, all it would take is for Natalie not to play her own idol to trigger Tony's idol. And you could have blindsided Tony. Then you're getting jury points. Then you are leaving Natalie in the game with an idol. But, like, bigger fish to fry in Tony at the moment. So, like, you know, she could have turned on Tony, and there's definitely merit to, you know, how did Tony not get votes at that final six is crazy. But also, if she wasn't going to turn on Tony, then, yeah, flushing her two closest allies' idols that would have been given to her in the next round was, like, a very bad move.
Yeah, agreed.
So I just wanted to say one more thing in my gender category before we, like, get to the rest of it, because we kind of went on a tangent. But I want to talk about Jeff's comments about gender. Yeah.
Yes.
So I want to give, like, Jeff some kudos, because I appreciate looking inwards and saying that on national TV and leaving it in the show when you don't need to do that.
Totally.
And I don't want to feel like I'm criticizing Jeff all the time, because I actually really appreciate that. But, like, last night I was just thinking, and I was thinking about our last podcast, and we were arguing about how Jeff had said he had never considered that there were five male winners in a row.
Yeah.
You said that he had thought about it. He was just saying that, which would be very tone deaf. I thought he could have possibly not thought about it. Either way, I don't love it. He, at the time, he knew there were six male winners in a row, assuming he knew Tony won. And he'd already had this conversation about gender. So for me, I like him taking that initial step, but what I would like them to do is listen to the big issues.
Does that prove that I was right?
No, it proves that Jeff is that much more obtuse.
No, but hold on. If he already had this conversation, then it would have already been clear about the gender biases in Survivor, and that discussion that he had with Dalton Ross or whatever it was would have happened afterwards.
It did happen afterwards.
Yeah, so it proves that he was being like, oh, I've never thought about it before.
I think that Jeff can have a conversation about gender and be like, oh, I've done something important. I will now call women by their last names and still not think about how many men have won in a row. Like, I genuinely think that could be true.
No, I'm doubling down on my thoughts.
I came into it being like, I don't want to have the same argument with you about this, but I still feel the same.
Some things change and some things stay the same.
But the thing is, like, Jeff has, okay, fine. Even take away that comment that we will never agree on. He's also said other things like, ooh, the fans just want to be critical and, oh, they you know, like, no one's, like, everyone's a critic, you know, and it's like, but you're saying that you know you do things that are wrong and you're willing to make pretty symbolic, helpful, we like it, move the needle forward, but pretty symbolic changes. Why aren't you willing to listen on things that are important and do relate to gender on a larger scale? So for me, I'm going to have to give Jeff a pass on everything he said while having had this conversation that we hadn't seen yet. But every time he comes out now and is like, well, why do the fans have to criticize? It's going to be like, but you know that you're doing things wrong and you know that things are unfair. Like, listen to fans. Like, listen to fans of different demographics, you know? Like, sometimes people aren't just trying to criticize for the sake of it and they actually feel like this is important.
Okay, this is going to sound bad, but I'm going to back up Jeff here about the critic comment, right? Because, like, yes, you are 1,000,000% correct that, like, there are things that need to change, both the gender-wise and also just, like, some of the shit things that are happening with the show, right?
And they're connected.
Right, yeah, of course. But, like, let's just talk about it in terms of, like, this is your podcast, right? This is something that you spend hours of your life working on. You're proud of it. And if someone criticizes it, like,
I hate that.
You hate that, right? And whether their critiques are valid or invalid, whatever, like, it must suck to have to critique, because you're creating a podcast which is supposed to bring people enjoyment. And if they're going to critique it, you just don't have to listen, people, right? So, that's why I hate critics, because it's like, you know, like, you don't need to kind of send that feedback straight to you or to whoever. But, like, it must be hard for him. He's devoted. It's hard for him. You know, he's got millions of dollars and he's famous. But, like, he has devoted his life to creating this thing, which has brought millions of people immense joy, and people have then built careers out of it. And, like, the thing that would feed back to him, unless you're just those kids on the street who tell him all the good stuff, is a lot of criticism. So, like, part of me is like, obviously there are critiques that you need, and everyone needs to be willing to take critiques, especially when you're on the level that he's on. But it must also suck. Like, I know, like, when I think I've taught a really good lesson, right? If I have one kid who's like, oh, that was shit. Like, if I hear something like that, then I'm just like, ah, I put so much time into that. And do you know what? It probably was a crap lesson because I forgot A, B, and C. But, like, God, that hurts. So, like, I have always given him a pass on the everyone's a critic line, because it would suck. Like, this is – Jeff is Survivor. And when you critique Survivor, you're critiquing Jeff. So, like, obviously we should still be allowed to critique Jeff, obviously. But I give him a pass on that. Like, everyone goes back to that one line he said. Like, leave the dude alone in that regard. Like, it must suck to get criticized. And everyone out there hates being criticized. You do. I do. The person listening to this does. Everyone hates being criticized. So let's forget the critic comment and let's focus on the actual problem, which is that there is a problem here, a gender problem, which he is very, very slowly, like super, super slowly awakening to. And whether he knows how to fix it or not, he needs to fix it. Now, if he needs to then go to those critics and take their positive information to make those changes, let's hope that that's what happens. And if not, they need to figure it out on their own, but they need to do it a lot faster. And that's my little rant about people bringing up the fact that he hates having critics.
Look, you're preaching to the choir. Like, no one has thinner skin than I do. Like, I totally get it. I'm just saying that, like, if there's an inherent flaw in the show, then, and you can't work out what it is, then you have to listen. Like, then you can't just be so deaf to it. Because the thing is, like, 6 male winners in a row, you know, hopefully as a society, we're moving in a more progressive way. The show is moving backwards. Why? Yes. If you can't work it out, people are telling you, so you can't be deaf to it. Like, I agree. Okay, if you don't like it, don't watch, don't listen. But to me, that's not what this is saying. To me, this is saying, if you don't like it, if you're a woman, don't even apply. The game doesn't value, even not even just a woman, a guy who's going to play in a different way. The game doesn't value, so why even try? And that obviously is like a fatal blow, or could be a fatal blow to the show. So it's much more than just like, don't consume this content. It's like, how do you interact with this content? Should you even go on the show? And it's important, important stuff. Like, I don't think, okay, fine. Don't listen to the hordes on Twitter. And that's me. I completely agree. But I have to believe that if Jeff can have a conversation saying, all right, I'm going to call Sarah Lucina now. Okay, that's like the cherry on top of all the other actual things that you could be doing. And to just call the women by their last name, if that's like what you're going to take from it, like, you've taken the wrong message. The message is, like, there are actual inherent biases here. What can we change? So one of the biases is, as I've said, gender bias exists in society, and that seeps into Survivor. And unfortunately, Survivor's not going to solve that. Society will move forward, and we can all do our part to move forward in that, and it will seep into the show slowly as society progresses. And Jeff calling women by their last name is that small social thing that will move the needle ever slowly, maybe, and I appreciate it. But there are actual big,
so slow,
simple, effective, immediate format changes that Jeff can actually make if he listens to how this is affected by gender and how this is actually important to both the show and society. And he can make those changes, but he does need to listen. So the critic line, I totally get it, and I don't spend that much time thinking about how hard it is to be Jeff Probst, and honestly, maybe I should. Like, maybe I should, because I do think
But,
like, this is bigger than that to me.
I don't want
to
conflate what I'm saying. Like, I 1,000,000% agree on all of those points. It's just that one little thing that always annoys me. Yeah,
yeah, no, like, and I get it. It sucks to say everyone's a critic, and don't listen to them. But then do think,
listen to the good
stuff.
What
is going wrong? Like, something is wrong. And I've had this conversation about gender. What is wrong? Is it a round table? I'm going to get the 10 female players and talk to them about how they feel
these biases
affect them. Don't even have it be for the audience, but have it be for the producers.
No, I would love to watch that. Could you imagine how good that would be if you got Parvati, you got Denise, you got Angelina, you got all these people around, and you just, like, gave them the chance to uninterrupted say their piece about why they think this is an issue. Like,
mm-hmm.
that would be the most compelling television. And it should
also be helpful.
Oh my God. It would be, because I would love to see him either pretend like he doesn't know, which is like my belief that he's pretending that he has, I've just never thought about it before. Like, you have a wife. Like, if you have a wife, you've thought about these things. Like, I'm sorry.
You're the kind of guy who thinks about these things. Not everyone thinks about these things just because they're married to a woman.
I think about these things on a daily basis when my wife goes to work in an all-male environment and teaches all boys. And I think about the way that it kind of, like, impacts her, and how, and I've thought about before when people say, oh, would you do blood versus water? I'm like, well, how would people react to my wife? Like, because she is a strong woman. Like, and I think about them. Surely he's thinking about them and ignoring it. So I think watching that discussion would be fantastic, because you'd watch him try and dance his way around the fact that he doesn't know them. Or if you're correct and he isn't so obtuse that he hasn't thought about them, could you imagine, like, those moments of realization, which he absolutely loves to milk for all they're worth? Like, could you imagine the moment of realization where Angelina is sitting there giving, like, a 40-minute diatribe about why, like, I would live.
I'm sure he's lived through that already, to be fair.
I would live for that. Like,
yeah. The thing is, like, Survivor is a male-created show, largely. I don't know every person on the production team. I've seen photos of the editing room. I know it's hosted by Jeff. I know it's executive produced by Jeff and other men who are very high up. And, like, they do a great job, and that's fine. But at the same time, it's like, female voices are important. So once you've realized this is an issue, it has to be so much more than, like, and I will now make these, like, symbolic small changes. Again, we love the cherries on top. Thank you for the cherries. But, like, you got to go for the ice cream, and the ice cream is structural changes. The ice cream is, even if it's not a panel of female players, which I think would be great, but, like, even if it's just promoting women to these spots and being like, how would this affect you? Like, just listening is actually the most important thing. So when he's saying everyone's a critic, I at least hope that he's listening to voices he at least cares about more than people on Twitter, which would be totally valid. I don't know if he's doing that, and that's my concern, but, like, the things that women have said about being on the show in terms of, like, small things, sitting at the front because you're shorter of tribal council means that if you whisper, everyone can see you, and you can't see what's going on behind you. That matters now in live tribals. You know, the fact that people have talked about how all the men are all the cameramen are cameramen. Like, there's so many little things, and then big things, and then structural changes that this is going in the wrong direction. How do we, you know, get on the right course? And not just because it would help women, which is nice, but also because it would make for a better game and a better show. To know that women can win, and to know that it is kind of equal, and to know that different play styles are valued as they once were. So that's what I'm hoping that Jeff would listen to. And any, like, symbolic changes he made, again, appreciate it. Appreciate that he would look inwards and say that on TV, but it needs to come with a little bit more for me. Like, I think that the actions need to match the words, even if those words are Lucina.
Yes. All true. I think about the experience from an Australian Survivor perspective. Australian Survivor is run by a female,
yeah.
A very, very strong female, and a very empathetic female, but a very strong female. And a lot of the main producers, like the co-executive producers, are female. And I would say 70 to 80% of the producers on the beach are female. Like, it is a very female run show. The challenge department is headed up by a female and a male. Like, it is, but we, Australian Survivor still has those issues.
Society has those issues.
Yeah, exactly. So, like,
we can't be like Survivor can do a lot, but it can't save society. But we can.
No, I know, obviously. But like, it is nice to see. I like playing Australian Survivor because it doesn't feel like, while the camps sometimes themselves feel like these kind of very jocular boys clubs, which I've never really loved in life, I can tell you that for sure. But I don't feel like the show is that. And I would hope that American Survivor isn't that. So maybe that is one thing that they could do.
Yeah, there's a lot here.
This is a whole off-season podcast. We can dive into.
Yeah, I mean, we got nothing but time. I mean, I got nothing but time after this ends. I do find it really interesting. But okay, yeah. We've gone through the gender category. We'll never agree on whether Jeff was being serious 6 months ago when he said that to Dalton Ross.
He is a liar.
I will take it to my grave.
Oh my God, I'm one of the critics.
Yeah, you're all a critic, right? No, no one should be. Okay, I don't know whether people should be critics anymore. I'm very confused. No.
People should be critics. People should be critics, right? Because that's just like what you do. We critique. Like, we're doing it right now. We're critiquing people's games. We're critiquing the show. But like, you also have to grant people the latitude to be frustrated when their little baby gets critiqued. Mm. That's all I'm saying.
All right. Well, I want to talk about a man after that. After all that, let's bring it back to men. No, I want to talk about Ben because. You talked about how enthralled you were about his move. People are mad that he quit. Second time this season, I think I'm defending a quit in quotation marks. People can't see my hands moving. So why did you love this so much?
I think that there was something incredibly realistic about the way he did it. And in a game where everyone has an overinflated sense of ego, inflated sense of their own ability, everyone's the hero of their own narrative, everyone thinks that they can win. Yeah, look, oh, everyone might have hated me, but if I just got to the end, I could have, like, you know, blah, 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 blah. It's like, no, everyone hated you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I thought it was incredibly perceptive and realistic for him to realize that it wasn't going to end the way that he had initially probably hoped. I think that he was carrying around the idea that no one had bequeathed him any fire tokens the whole time.
Yeah, he said that. Yep,
I think that, and I think that that is something that would really get to you after a while. Every day you'd be sitting there and you'd be waiting like, oh my God, maybe I'm going to be the one who's told to go check my
bag.
That's
so sad, Nick. Don't even say that to me.
No, Shannon, like these, like every day you weigh up like everything. I have a very strong sense of self and I do not care whether I am like included or not included. I went most of the first time I played like not being like included and I like absolutely loved it. Except for just the day before I was voted out. And this time, like, but you still go like, wow, these people aren't vibing with me. Like I didn't feel that this time in All Stars, but I definitely felt that the first time. You're like, oh my God, like I'm doing all this, like, and I want to get to the end. And then you let yourself hope and you're like, if I got to the end, maybe I could, you know, I would have Brooke and Matt's vote, but like, oh, would I have anyone else? You're like, yes, I would. And then you're like, no, I wouldn't. And your thoughts, you go up and you get dashed and you go up and you get dashed. And that was a first time player. I hadn't even know what the echo chamber of Survivor thought about. Ben has been through 4 years or whatever it is of people on Twitter being like, oh, fucking Ben, blah, 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 blah. And like, and I look, I've been one of them. Like, I've never said anything super mean, but it's just like when the cast came out, I was like, ah, Ben, no, let Todd be back. You know, like I was even just hearing that must suck. Like, and he's had all that. Then he's playing this game where he is making it to the end and he's charting this journey and he's realizing this isn't going to work for me. And then you start to reassess and you go, okay, so what can I take from this game? And what he could take from this game is the fact that, like, he left with friends. And like as someone, like I said, I have a pretty strong, I think a very strong sense of self. One of the things I wanted out of, and I said this to you in the deep dive, was what I wanted out of All Stars was an alliance of people who wanted to work with me. It was something that I didn't have in the first time, people that wanted to go to bat for me. And when I found that and I had that, it was one of the things that when I was voted out, I was like, I had this. And it really kind of like helped me go like, sweet, it was easy, good, done, happy, had a great experience. Ben didn't have that the first time. He got that this time and he was able to bow out gracefully and say, do you know what? I'm not going to win. I can't go through that. I can't go through the idea of getting reamed by the jury, by Adam and Jeremy and people who want to get their to twist the knife. I can't go through the fact of like another year of TV of sitting at home going, maybe I did win, like letting himself hope every morning, like he'd be hoping for that fire token. Like, and I thought it was an extremely graceful thing. That is something that we haven't seen from him. I thought it was a perceptive thing, and I thought it was a really human thing. And and it also helped save the finale because I didn't want to see him at the end. I didn't want to see him get reamed out.
Yeah.
I wanted Michelle and Natalie to make it through one more round. So I thought in all the ways, for all the reasons, I absolutely loved it.
Agree with all of that. Like, I think it reminds me of two moves that I've praised in the past, and that is Sandra pulling the sail when she has the self-awareness to know she can't win a challenge. Like, Ben had as much chance of winning the game as Sandra did of winning a challenge. Like, it's cool to be that self-aware. Last week with AK, we were like, people just don't know if they're drawing dead, because that's not even just self-awareness. Like, that is so much strength to know that, like, something you put that much effort in is something you can't win. Like, how could anyone really feel that way? It must be so rare. And like, Ben got to that point with the fire tokens, like you said, with Nat coming back, as he said, and being like, and he kind of got a sense of the jury from the fact that she'd been a juror who didn't have a lot of love for him, with the fact that he hadn't been given any advantages from the edge. Like, he really had nothing, and he knew it, and he was close enough to the end to know that, like, there's not two people here I can beat, there's not one person here I can beat, and I'm gonna go to the end and get destroyed and have this festering wound that isn't actually gonna be closed until next May. And he didn't want that, and like, that's completely his prerogative. The other move that I could compare it to would be Tara in Survivor New Zealand season 2, final 4. She has a final 3 against their opponent who wins immunity, and instead of letting her, one of her other opponents, either of who could have won at that point, not go to the end, she falls on her sword, doesn't get 0 votes the next day, actually goes in and is a juror and makes that move happen. It was like my favorite move she made in the whole game. So that sense of like self-awareness, strength, humanity, as you've said, like, people have said, well, it's so unfair to the other winners who want to be in the game. It's like, no, it's not, because he was trying to win, and he actively, until day 37, until he realized he couldn't win, he was trying to win. He blasted past all of those people, which he totally earned. And then what he can do with that position that he's earned is, you know, he's find another objective when he finds out he can't win, which is help his friends win. And that's completely his prerogative because he's earned that position.
Absolutely right.
I think that another person that I could negatively compare it to is, like, I've always said, okay, I don't like that Tarzan is someone who doesn't want to win ever. Like, he gave up the game 4 votes in. At that point, no one's drawing dead, right? So that just is like a mentality thing for me. Ben's not someone who doesn't want to win. Survivor.
The Tarzan thing. Tarzan thought he could win.
Right. Okay.
That is not that is the difference, right? If anyone tries to compare this to Tarzan, Tarzan thought he could win.
Yeah, and he still didn't want to win.
Exactly. And he tried to dress it up in a way that he was like, this is just, you know, no. Tarzan thought he could win. He thought that if he got to the end, he would scrape a few votes. He would definitely get Moana's vote. He'd get Dave's vote. He thought he could do that, right? And, you know, different circumstances, you know, Dave, you know, some kung fu magic, kind of like mental gymnastics, all these things that happen. It is not the same situation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Ben's not someone who doesn't want to win Survivor, who would actively choose not to win Survivor if he could win. He was one Survivor. Like, it's like an objective that he has. But at this time, on day 37, as close to the end as you can be, he knew without a shadow of a doubt correctly that he couldn't win, and he acted on that. And I think that, like, again, the self-awareness is brilliant. I actually love it as a move, even more than just a gesture. As a human gesture, yes. I love it. How much money did he give up to do this? What a kind thing to do.
He gave up, place, like... didn't he give up, like, you know, what is it, like, the difference between 100,000 and, like, 20, I don't know, something like that.
I don't know what fifth place gets now. I'd probably guess, like, okay, I don't even know what the winners got at all. But in a normal season, fifth place probably gets, like, $40,000. And third place gets, like, $85,000. Like, that is not money. That's $45,000 American dollars. Like, that's a lot of money. Like, he makes that choice for his friends. Even if you've won $1 million, like, that's still a lot of money. I think that's and he might have even been a bigger disparity in all winners. I don't know. But, like, I think that's really cool from a human moment. And then the third thing is, like, from a story element, unbelievable to me. Like, the fact that he's been driven by our perceptions of him, and that shaped his own perceptions of his last game, to the point where I think it's, I've always been saying it's gone way too far. I didn't actually expect to spend so much of the season defending Ben, or debending, as I've coined it. But, like, he had this perception in his mind that he'd never had alliances and all of this, like, which was partly true. And his whole thing was like this rocky journey, like, make relationships, but then he had negative relationships, and it wasn't perfect, but it was compelling. It was one step forward, two steps back at time. Like, it was super compelling. And for that two-season narrative to kind of end on the circle of him being like, I won't split votes on Denise because she's my friend, and I'll just give the game to you because that's more important to me, right before Fire, which was the symbol of him putting the game above the social relationships, which was the symbol of he can win without social relationships. He actually takes himself out before his sure Fire again, like, sorry for the same pun, but like he takes himself out before that opportunity, which again, the symbol of his anti-social play in the last game. It now becomes a symbol of how he forgoes that for his social play. And it's like just a beautiful narrative. I think the season has had unbelievable long-term storytelling, unbelievable series storytelling in terms of like, as we've said, through the history of the show. And this was like just a perfect encapsulation of that.
Yep. Agreed.
And so great stuff.
Yep. Definitely. He can do whatever he wants. He did it. It's not a quit. He had even said, and I don't know whether I read this or not, he said that if she didn't want to do it, then he wouldn't have done it. She accepted to do it.
Yeah.
So then he went through with it. And I think that he handled it brilliantly.
I mean, he didn't. He voted against someone who couldn't go home. Like, he gave her the choice to do it.
Yes, yes.
From her perspective, I hate it, right? Like, like, why would you take out, like, if someone is saying, I can't win, I will play the game for you, be like, great, I'm not voting you out. You're now me. You're me number two. Like, come to the final four. You'll either beat Natalie at Fire for me, or if Natalie wins immunity, you'll beat Tony at Fire for me. If somehow we go to the Fire together, you could just throw it for me. Like, that is an unbelievable. To be two people in the final four is unbelievable. Why would you put yourself out?
100%. Like, the schemer in me was like, oh, my God. If someone came up to me, like, okay, say I made it to this point and, I don't know, Jackie had said this to me. And was like, you know, I don't think I can win, blah, blah, blah. I would have been like, Jackie, you can win. You're going to get votes, this person, that person, that person. You and me, let's do this. And like knowing in the back of my head, like, sick, I'm going to get all the votes. Like, you know, like I would have been that dastardly. But like, I think it speaks to the power of the human connections that they both had. And that's why I liked it.
Yeah. Tick, but also like for her, like how is this going to speak to the jury? Like, I just don't understand how it would have just been like, yeah, I just made that move for no reason. Like, Tony said something really, really cool in his reunion video, I think it was, on CBS All Access, which was like, I never make moves just to put them on my resume. Like, I make moves to advance myself in the game, and then by the end of the game, my game speaks for itself. And I think that's a bit of a difference, because, like, there was nothing to this move other than, like, I did it without Tony, and I can say that to the jury. And, like, that's not a good enough reason to make a move, because it'll be like, well, it's not a good move. So, like, why do that? It's hollow.
Exactly. And then he would have, for it to actually have counted, he would have had to have gone back to Ponderosa and been like, yeah, yes, she got me.
Oh my God. Yeah.
He would have had to have lied and acted. And then if I was the jury member, I would have been like, oh my God, the jury is lying to the jury in a way that is so not kosher to me. And I just would have, I would have hated that.
But he didn't even do it. Like, you can see him, at least to Denise, he was like, yeah, I went out on my own terms and stuff. So he didn't even come to Ponderosa like, Sarah, why? Why have you done this to me?
Oh, my God, then it's really, you know, okay.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, so, like, it would have been, like, Sarah would have been like, well, I made this move without Tony. It's like, didn't Ben offer to fall with his sword? Like, you know, you can't even necessarily, A, say it's a good move, and B, that it's, like, even your move. Like, he gave you permission to do it. Like,
yeah, that would have looked even worse if she came in saying, and then I took out Ben. It's like, Ben spilled the beans. We know the real story. Like, Ben, you weren't supposed to say that part.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think this is what I'm saying, like, the panic in terms of, like, for someone to come back. The whole time Michelle was like, well, Tony will beat you. Oh, no, he won't. You haven't seen it, whatever. Then Nat comes back. It's like, I actually was a juror for the past month, and Tony's definitely going to win. And I think she panicked a little bit, because that's not a great spot to be there with Tony, who you are committed to going to the end with. Anyway, he has an idol, ends up winning immunity, ends up winning Fire. She obviously doesn't take a shot at him. But, like, you're probably thinking, like, I think she started to panic because she realized she was in a bit of an unwinnable situation. You know, at that point, she's at the final five. She's going to four with Tony and Natalie, who are both immune. It's probably a losing game for her. Like, I think she was panicking a bit.
Yep.
All right. Well, who else do we have to talk about before we get to the chizzy? Denise is someone we have not spent a lot of time on. The show didn't spend enough time on, I think. I'm a big Denise fan. What do you take anything away from her legacy this season?
The only thing I'll say is that when I found out the cast, I literally tweeted, like, oh, my God, Stapley Heads. It's our go time. We've been waiting years for this. Like,
do you know who's a huge Stapley Head?
Who?
My husband. Loves Denise.
Really? Yeah. Such a
huge Denise fan. It's so endearing to me. Like, he just freaking loves Denise.
Yeah, I love Denise. I do believe that, like, she kind of got a bit lost in the shuffle, kind of like Kim this season for me. While I think the move to take out Sandra hurt my soul because, you know, I love me some Sandra. But it was, you know, it was great. I think that it was, it loomed much larger in the show than it did for us at home in terms of like her threat level. But I also do think that she just wasn't pivotal enough to the overarching story. And yeah, it's, it kind of sucks that that's what happened for Denise, but you know, she made it sixth in an all winner season. So good on her, but you know, sucks that, you know, she wasn't more pivotal to the story.
Yeah, I think we saw what she was capable of and not capable of to both pretty extreme degrees. Like, the Sandra move is obviously the best move of her career. We know that she's capable of not just one of the best moves of her career, the best move of her career, but one of the best moves of all time. And it's cool to know that she can get to that point. You didn't think that?
No, I really didn't think it was that great. Like, I don't know whether I really didn't think, I thought it was so flashy and cool and oh my God. And the amount of talk it just generated. And it's like, Survivor can still make us like come up with new things. And it was amazing. And these players are great. But like, I also thought it was unnecessary. I thought it was a move for the sake of a move. And it's the reason why it was a waste of firepower to get out someone that is going to be, you know, she's got a huge target on her anyway. And it's the reason why it's so hard to get someone like Parvati to come back and play Survivor, because people are just willing to do things that are obviously overblown in order to get you out. And didn't love it.
I loved it. I won't really litigate why, because it's in that podcast. Yeah. I probably still think it's like the second best move of the season, maybe after the Sophie boot,
which was the flashiest move of the entire season.
That's true. Sure. Yeah, and I mean, you can probably go either way on it, but like, okay, fine. Even if you don't love it, she's still capable of
definitely
putting that move into effect, you know, like,
and having the balls to do it.
Exactly. So, and that's not something we hugely saw of her throughout the rest of her Survivor career. So it's cool to know that she can get to that place, even if you take away from some of the merit of it, like in actual action, she can do that. But then I think that, like, we spoke about it a bit with Kim, but like, even more so for Denise, I think we saw how much she kind of fell behind the pace of the game, to the point where she literally was like, I can't keep up with this live tribal, and I also refuse to. Like, endure and let go, I totally get it, but I also think it's like, at points, maybe don't endure and let go. At the final six, when, like, Tony is a huge threat, and they could definitely split the votes on you, and you're not even really in their top three anyway, like, maybe don't endure and let go. Like, at that point, maybe flip on Tony. Like, those are tattoos, you know?
Yeah. I think, I think it was Steven said that he's really keen to hear the Kim or the Sarah podcast or deep dive. I'm really keen to hear the Denise podcast.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool.
Definitely. I mean, she's like a slower player, as we've seen, and there's merit to that. But this game, to keep up with Tony, some people fell behind the pace. Okay, last one I'm going to talk about before we get to the Shizzy is Michelle. We've spoken about her game. Legacy for you, where Michelle comes away from this.
Much higher than I would have placed her before. I think that I was always a huge Aubrey fan. I was never someone who was outwardly cruel to Michelle like people are, which
that's good. Same.
Disgusting. Like, please stop doing that, people. but like, and this is, again, it's one of my gripes. Like, you can like two things at the same time, people. Like, on Survivor, it's like, no, I love Dom, so I hate Wendell, and it's like, they can both be okay, guys. Like, you know, like, no one's asking you to choose both, choose one or the other. I feel like this season, while she also couldn't get her feet under her, it showed that she is scrappy. I love the immunity wins in clutch positions. I think her confessionals are really fun, and I think that even though she didn't get any jury votes in the end, as I said at the top of the show, that I don't think that should take away from her because she was going up against the best. So I hope that Michelle has been able to work through some of the trauma that has come, trauma in inverted commas, trauma that has come from being labeled an undeserving winner. And I think that she should hold her head high. And I would even be keen to see a third time.
Definitely, definitely. I think for Michelle, like, she articulated what I loved about her game in Final Tribal Council, like, as much as I could say it, I do think it was better than her winning game. As much as she was out of the loop, she articulated how much harder it was and how many more tribals she had to go to and how much more she had to do. I definitely think it has the best moves of her career. The Ethan boot, for example, getting on the right side at the swap, like, the great read she had last week, the friend she was making, the fire tokens, like, I think that was all much more active and obvious to us than even in her winning game, even though this one obviously resulted than 0 votes. So as a game, obviously it's flawed, but I think it was great. But more than that, I did not expect to be as compelled as I was by the character journey, the conversations with Boston Rob, as him being a losing finalist who people say was Rob, to her who people say that she shouldn't have won. You know, Ben saying that they were both controversial winners at Final Tribal Council, this journey she had to prove herself was so compelling to me. I did not expect for her and Ben to be two of the most compelling character journeys for me. And I think that's why I love the season so much, and why I love the cast, is because, you know, the people I didn't expect things from actually delivered on that. And then the people who I expect to deliver, like, they always do to me as well. So great across the board.
And again, not to draw comparisons to my own game, but suck it, I'm going to do it anyway. And also,
no one minds when you do that except you. Like, you're the only one bringing it up.
Oh, I know. I just feel like, you know, it's just like you're not here to hear about my game. But like these parallels, I think, are important to help get into the mindset. In that, and I'm, again, not comparing myself to a winner, but like I have a very similar idea in the fact that I only went to 5 tribal councils in my first game. And while I lasted 37 days, which doesn't equate to a placing that she got, it's very similar time length on the island, that I only went to 5. She went to, what, 6, whatever it was,
yeah,
in 39 days. And I went further. I did further in my first game than I did my second one. And I was more in the loop with probably across the board than I was in the second game. And I'm way more prouder of myself.
Yeah,
I'm way
the parallels
of
are huge. The parallels.
And I think that it's okay to take that away and not have beaten your position and be super happy with your game and way more confident and like tick off all these things that you didn't get to do the first time. And I think that Michelle did that. So
I totally see it. You and Michelle, you're like one person. That's a very good game comparison.
I've met her in real life, and she is like a super charming person. Like, I met her in Boston, and she is lovely, and I think that it's clear why she is a good Survivor player. And, she should hold her head up high.
Michelle 3.0. I'm excited to see it, definitely.
I'm down. Yeah.
Okay, speaking of the future, just a couple of things here. So they've lowered their age to 16.
Hate it. I know I said that I'm a critic, but this is a terrible. I'm not saying it's terrible for the show, because I will watch the shittest reality shows with the dumbest people, young kids, old kids, whatever.
The dumbest kids?
Young kids. Young kids, old kids. I think this idea is so dumb for the mental strain that goes into playing Survivor. The not even going out there on the island, because I think that I could take many of my year eights who could go out there and thrive out in the conditions because it's fun many times. It's putting a 16-year-old in a primetime television show when there are critics online is a terrible decision. I don't know what they're planning, but whatever they're planning, they
Stop
need
it.
To do extremely carefully cut it out completely. And I have played Survivor with fully realized adults who have had lives, careers, successes, and I have seen the game destroy them from the inside out, and I've watched them come back. They collapse like a freaking tree that's rotting from the inside, and you should not be putting a 16-year-old out there on the island to then convey it onto TV. And I hate this idea.
I feel like I'm uniquely placed to talk about this because I went on a reality show when I was 18 years old. I played with 16 to 21-year-olds on Top Model. It wasn't exactly prime time, and it wasn't like a show that forces you to be mean to each other. You know, people just did that of their own volition. But, like, it was hard and it was bad, and I don't regret it because it was a cool experience, but, like, I don't know I don't like it because, as you said, there's so many parts to it. There's being in prime time. I don't love that like recorded version of me was a version of me before I was me. I was a kid.
Exactly.
And also the social media stuff was a lot less than it is now. I did find the forums. I still think that like 2011 is very different to 2020. And like it's terrible. Like the way that we've seen Survivor contestants, storied adult veterans of the show, leave Twitter or talk about on the show how they couldn't trust their family members or how they didn't know themselves. Like, to go on into the spotlight anyway is hard as an adult. And also to play a game that you need like so much strength for and so much self-knowledge for and like the strong sense of identity. Like, it's just not possible for a 16-year-old to have that. Probably not even for, like, an 18-year-old. Like, I mean, they should probably maybe, like, we've had some good teenagers. I'm not taking away from, like, the Will Walls and the Michael Yogas of the world. But actually thinking about it, like, I'm surprised it's gone as well as it has. And there's obviously some very strong teenagers that they chose to be safe. Maybe we bump it up to 21, but definitely you don't make it lower than 18. I think it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, but we don't, and like when you say I'm surprised it's gone as well as it has, like we, the viewer, don't know the truth of how people react. And myself as a player, I could tell you stories that would make you pull your hair out and cry for the people that I've played Survivor with, and you would never know.
Yeah.
Because you don't see the reality. You see the bit that is portrayed on the show and what they portray in their own social media. It destroys people's lives. And I can say that, like, it's so upsetting that it destroys people's lives because if they are not equipped for it. The other thing is, while you say you're uniquely placed because you played a TV show, I work with 16-year-olds every single day. I have probably taught myself personally over, like, 2,000, 3,000 kids from the age 16, 17, 18. And I think I could probably count on one hand the kids that I would maybe suggest could possibly cope with it because it is such a grueling thing to come back and watch hundreds of thousands of people talk about you. It is a terrible idea. And I hope we are all interpreting it incorrectly, that there is some fun little spin that they're going to put on it that doesn't involve what we think it involves. And I think we have to leave it at that because I'm going to get mad as a teacher of young men that there are currently 16-year-olds out there who think I am going to apply for Survivor. And that it makes me super upset.
Yeah, it's definitely like that meme because we ask for so many things, but no one asks for this. So it's like, no one, no one, no one, Jeff. We're going to put 16-year-olds on Survivor. Like, no one is asking for this. If anything, we're asking them to skew older, right?
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly.
Yeah. Anyway, but they did say Survivor could be back this year. So that's the positive for me. Like, it seems impossible, but Tony being a two-time Survivor winner is impossible. So who knows?
Hot take from me. I think this might, I don't know if it's a hot take. I know everyone and people are talking about filming it in domestically, like Australia. We could go film where they filmed Australian Survivor season two, Survivor Australia season two. You know, you can film, you know, Midwest or whatever it is, that all this stuff that Wild West that Rob's talking about. Mm-hmm. My hot take is that, like, even if they have the choice of filming it in Fiji or there, I would much rather see a different change of scenery. I'm over the Fiji thing.
Okay.
I'm ready for a new change of scenery, something to inject life into the show that isn't a major structural format change, that is just a visual aesthetic change. And I think that those are the types of changes which will keep Survivor at least a little bit fresh. We don't need to throw out the rule book every single time. We don't need to create a new economy. We don't need to do this. Change the location. It will be enough to kind of at least get the show to kind of like find maybe its footing in some capacities. And I think that is apart from the safety of people's health, I actually think that it would be a cool idea if pushed into it.
Yeah, it could be a blessing in disguise. It forces them to not stick to the status quo, adapt to our situation, and then that makes them adapt in general.
Yep.
I like it. But unfortunately, the way they've adapted is being like, we'll put 16-year-olds on the show.
Oh my God.
Why, Jeff? Okay, it's fine. I can only give so much Jeff criticism in one podcast. All right, let's get to the chizzy.
Let's do it.
Okay, take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3. 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 3, 2, 1.
Okay, so the chizzy is here. Nick, do you want to go 3, 2, 1 or 1, 2, 3? In the off-season, we're going to work out what's happening with the chizzy formula. But for now, I will give you free reign. Go first and give it in the order that you want.
I liked the discussion you had the other day. Who was it with when you said, when you were talking, was it with Rob?
Yeah, no, Rob. Yeah, because Jason came on the podcast and said that I need to change the chizzy. And anyway,
yeah, I feel like I've said this to you before as well.
Why do people in my life hate me?
I feel like that what you settled on is that when it's a very obvious thing that you can just start with the three.
Yeah.
And I feel like in the finale, there's nothing more obvious than the chizzy.
That's true. Finale.
So I think we go to 3, 2, 1.
Yeah. Okay, go.
Actually, can I say one suggestion with the chizzy?
What is it with people?
The way that I feel I used to do it when it was the Danzy is that I used to do that. I say my three, then you say your three. Then I say my two.
Not even chizzy anymore. Just check. Okay, fine.
Then you say your two. I say my one, and then you say your one. And I feel
why
like
just call it the Danzy again. Just take away the whole award from me.
surely people out there agree that, like, it's not...
Don't ask the fans if they... Hello, notifications.
Don't you think it's better than just, like, you saying 3, 2, 1 and then me saying 3, 2, 1?
Okay, fine. We'll try. Okay, fine. Okay, I'll try anything because who knows? I'm pretty delirious. Just, okay, give three Look, points. Give you a
while
three
the jizzy is in a state of flux, I thought I would just throw that extra thing out.
It wasn't in a state of flux before, and now nothing has meaning. Can you just give your 3 points now?
My 3 points are to, obviously, to Tony.
Yep.
You just, I don't know whether we've even spoken enough about how good he is.
We did say he was the best winner of all time and the best player of all time.
I know. So I don't think we need to say it again, but like we could keep talking for the next few hours, but we're not going to because it's clear greatest winner of all time, in my opinion.
Yeah. And also, we don't have a Chizzy chart for the season because we missed a couple of weeks, but like he definitely won the Chizzy. I've definitely given him 3 Chizzy points for like, again, I've lost count, 5 weeks, I think.
Maybe. See, the Chizzy means nothing.
Yeah, please, Nick, you're going to make me cry on the own podcast, but you've already done once before in your ex interview. So, like, this is too many times.
Not
He's amazing.
Great.
Also,
not
like,
a great time for the chiz.
He was also great in this actual episode, as well as, like, winning the season. Like, great reads, great at Final Tribal Council. He, like, had the jury eating out of the palm of his hand. So, like, definitely
a
good point.
The way they were laughing, like, oh, my goodness. It just, could you just imagine being Michelle and that? It's just like...
Yeah.
Not laughing for me.
But. Yeah, they start telling knock-knock jokes. Like, what can I do to kind of get up to this point? All right, 2 points. Who are you going to give to?
2 points. I'm going to give my 2 points, and I hate to do this, I'm going to give it to Sarah.
Okay.
And I know she had a bad episode, and I know she – that Nat, I love Nat way more than I love Sarah, but someone literally quit the game – for their own personal reasons, but did it also for her. And I can't think of an example of a better, stronger game, except maybe a stronger social game than except maybe Tony convincing Wu to take him to the end. Like that is, that is like such a strong thing to get someone who's literally crying and saying, I want to leave, or I want to leave for these reasons, but I'm doing it also for you. So I give mine 2 points to Sarah.
That is impressive. But at the same time, like, Tony convinced Wu to lose the game. Like, he would have won. Like, Sarah, like, Ben was losing anyway, so I don't see it as, like, as important. I also see it as much more of a Ben thing, but it would be wrong not to credit her as well. Like, obviously nothing happens by accident. But I'm going to give 2 points to Michelle. I don't think there's a lot to fault in this episode from her. I think she, you know, maybe could have gone to fire for clout. Apparently she, like, was basically, like, in, like, you know, asking Nat not to, and she was kind of emotional about it. She was obviously in the best situation.
What do you mean she was asking her not to?
Like, well, I think Nat said she was going to put Michelle into fire, which, like, at that point, Michelle, like, might as well have done, because she was kind of drawing dead probably with those three people. But Michelle, like, really didn't want to go and, like, was so emotional about it that Nat was like, she won't be able to handle it, so she didn't put her into fire.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, that could be good or bad. It's like she assured herself a final three spot, I guess, by doing that, but also maybe get that clout. I don't really know. It wasn't a winning position for her at a point, but I still think, you know, that clutch immunity, good reads continued, you know, from that. And I don't think she made a lot of mistakes in this episode, so I'm giving her 2 points. And
cool.
Who are you giving a point to?
I'm going to give my 1 point to Nat.
Okay.
Her performance in the challenges is unreal. And I've never been someone who values challenges over all the other stuff, but I just wanted to make a special mention of how she kept catching those balls in midair with one hand tied behind her back as they were shooting out of that thing. Unreal. So that's one of the reasons. But the other reason is I love that she just came in, she swooped in, she identifies Michelle being on the bottom, works with her. I love that they're just her natural effervescence just kind of like pops out there, and they want to work together. I think it's pretty amazing that she found the idol, especially with Tony and Ben around. That's pretty unreal. She wins the challenges. I just feel like she did a lot. She didn't do as much as Chris Underwood. Okay, we've gathered that, but I think she did a lot, and I think she did more than Michelle in that. If we're just looking at this episode on its own. Whereas I think Michelle did maybe more across the whole season, Nat did more this episode, and I'm here to judge this episode.
I came into my notes thinking I was going to give a point to Nat, but just once I started writing down all the things I disagreed with what she did, all the mistakes I think she made pretty individually, or at least like leading it over Michelle, I think that I couldn't give her a point. So I'm actually going to give a point to Ben.
Okay.
Just because of how much I love that final five move on like a human story and game level.
I feel like that's something that if someone else did, you'd be like, does the chizzy mean nothing to
me? No, because I'm fairly certain, and I didn't have time to check when I was watching the 1,000 of Jury Speaks videos, but I'm fairly certain I gave a point to Tara for this exact thing. So, and that wasn't a final four where three people were getting chizzy votes, I think. But also, I think that's what it was. I don't really remember a lot about that season, but a lot about the coverage from 2 years ago, but I'm pretty sure I did that. And I almost gave a chizzy point to Sandra for raising the sail, but I thought other people did more. I like self-awareness. That's very self-aware. Very perceptive. I like it. And also, I enjoy asking people if the chizzy means nothing to them because I'm dramatic. So either way. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. All right. Some questions from the listeners. Some things that we didn't get to. This is my favorite question. It has some spoilers if anyone wants to skip ahead for the most recent season of Survivor South Africa Season 7, Island of Secrets. Best game of the last year. Ding Marry Kill Star. So you got Rob Bentele, you got David, you've got Tony, who I'm saying I think are the three best winning games of all time, and they've all happened in the last year. I would rank it Tony, Rob, David, but Ding Marry Kill these three games.
I'll be honest, I didn't get to see the end of South Africa because I left to go play.
That's just where are your priorities? Sounds like you have to kill that game.
I was literally watching it like right up until I left. And the episode just before I left may have been the thing about Jacques with the what he said or something like that. Yeah. And I remember I've got the cliff notes of it. Anyway, the guy who was our night producer was actually a producer, a cameraman on both Winners at War and that season. And I asked him about it, and I said, who won? Like, how does it end? And he wouldn't tell me, but he said that it was just like that whole thing was really sad. And I was like, no, that kind of sucks. So I haven't gone back to watch it. But I got to say, I know you carry on about it. From what I saw, I wasn't super impressed. Like, it was great, but like to put it even in the realm of what David did seems like either I missed something in the final.
I mean, you missed like a ton of stuff
in the home stretch. But from what I saw before then, like, no chance. So I'm going to kill him. I'm going to ding Dave.
I mean, you were meant to be killing games, not people. Just kill that guy. Okay.
Ding Dave, because I feel like it was super impressive and it was to watch. It felt shitty to be someone who was steamed rolled by it, but also very impressed that he did all that. But you just can't beat Tony, so I'm going to put Tony at the top.
I think I would marry Rob's game. So I would marry Rob's game. It was just like so comprehensive. Like, he's the only one who was always in the loop from what I can remember. Like, he was the most in the loop. So it's just like the most stable, the most comprehensive. Like, that's what you want from your marriages, right?
Boring TV. He was so boring to watch.
Okay. To marry him, his game. I'm happy to marry his game.
Oh my God. Like, he was like watching paint dry. Like,
okay, you're not a woman.
Look, I know he's a very attractive guy. He's got those dreamy eyes, but he was boring, boring, boring. And like, you cannot compare that to Dave and to Tony. Do you know what I think about? Do you know, like, you watch, like, I'm not on TikTok, but like, you see those TikTok videos pop up of people who like do the like the miming of like famous scenes from like, you know, like funny scenes from reality TV. Maybe it's like the Real Housewives or the Kardashians or whatever it is. And it's just like people. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Cool. People could make a ton of David ones of those and a ton of Tony ones. And it's like, you could never make one of those about anything that Rob said, because like, he was boring, monotone, not interesting. Would never want to watch him play again, but I would sign up to watch Dave or Tony play any day of the week.
But we're not ding, marry, killing them as characters. And Rob is like, I thought he was a great character. He's not as good as Tony and Dave, probably the two, like two of the best characters ever. I thought he was really compelling. It's not just because he's super good looking.
But like, the reason, but yeah, but the game thing, that yes, we're talking about their games, but like, part of the game is the fact that like, Dave was able to do what he did being Dave.
But like, Rob as well comes in as like this behemoth of a man. And but that's one. Like,
no, there's the, Survivor is littered with like behemoths of men who are just kind of like you do forget about. It's about the overt personality, the funniness, the fact that you are able to kind of like, you know, spin a yarn. You're animated. You are always in people's eye line, not because you're a behemoth, but on top of being a behemoth, you're a strategic behemoth. And on top of that, you're a social behemoth, and you're so funny, and you make great confessionals, and everyone knows this about you, and you still do it. Like, that's why it's just like crazy that Dave and Tony were able to do those things, having been being so front of center for every single element of life and Survivor, not just for their physical attributes and their strategic game. It's like there's another four or five attributes on top of that.
I will say, like, having done two deep dives with Dave and one with Rob, like, I got the same vibe from both, which is, like, I get it from both, like, in terms of, like, talking to them and, like, in what people have said about Rob, like, that he just draws you in. Like, I think Rob could win again and again. Like, I think he's that good. And, like, it could probably be compared to Kim. Obviously, he's, like, a first-time player. But I don't think he probably had, like, the idiocy of the One World cast. But it was just that comprehensive. Like, I don't think that Tony and definitely not Dave's game are as perfect, but they're probably more flashy, so I give them credit to that. I mean, I still think Tony played the best game of all time, but anyway, semantics on this, but I just think like the stability of Rob's game and how on lock it was. You want your marriage to be on lock. You want to feel like it's never in doubt, so that's why I'd marry it. I would ding the Tony game because, again, just like flashy and brilliant, and I don't really get what the ding is meant to be in the ding marriage. I get it, but I don't know how I meant to translate it. And then the kill, I would kill David's game because he had to beat you to do it, obviously.
Oh, that's so kind of me.
I was like waiting the whole time to say this nice thing about you, and you just could not keep going on about how much you Rob played a bad game. I'm like, just stop so I can kill David's game in deference to you. Just let me give you the compliment.
All I know is that, thank you, I appreciate that. All I know is that I now want to see, like, why are there not more Survivor TikToks? Like can people,
is that what you got from this?
Yeah, that is what I got from this. Can, like, now I'm thinking about it, can people like make them and then send?
Nick, that's what the 16-year-old Survivors are going to do after they go on the show this next season.
I love those funny, like, I saw someone like, you know, imagine doing someone doing like a mouth of like, I can get loud too. What the, you know, like of just these classic moments in Survivor history.
How do you do it? You know, if not you, who? If not now, when?
But people can do things of mine if they really feel that is like something they would want to do.
You're going to have to start something here.
What?
Yeah, you're going to have to start doing some TikToks.
No. I'm not doing it. But like, I want to see. Actually, maybe that'd be funny to see people do like my fight with JL. That would actually be quite funny.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I've got nothing on. I don't have TikTok. I want this to be how I start.
I don't either. To be honest, I don't even really know what it is. But if anyone wants to send me like funny Survivor mimes, mine included, go for it.
Make sure they're a Rob Bentley, though.
I would get a little chuckle out of that.
Okay. All right. Well, LaRue Buta, speaking of Survivor South Africa, asks, how important is prepping puzzles before you play? Michelle proved that if you've won it before, you can win it again. I wanted to ask you this question because I saw, oh, is it unfair because Michelle had done that puzzle? How do you feel that impacts it?
I feel like that is just like so, like, it's so lucky for her that like she had a puzzle that she had done and won before, which is amazing. But, you know, all the challenges were from seasons that people have done before. So, you know, it's not unfair in that it's not unfair. You definitely have to practice. I didn't go and re-practice any of the puzzles that I had already done and won because I felt like I had already had those on lock in my brain. It was more about practicing different types of puzzles. But if anyone wants to go back and listen to my billion hour deep dive with you, like the first, what was it, hour or
so, and a half,
was just about how much prep I did and how many puzzles and stuff like that. So yes, LaRue, you know better than anyone that the puzzle is the great equalizer, and you don't want it to be the great equalizer. You want it to be your thing and you want it to have it on lock. And yes, I think that it's way more important than getting out there and CrossFitting. No, that's not true. But
that was really important. There's like, yeah. Natalie almost won $1 million from CrossFit. John Densford asked, this will be the last question. Of the 20 players from the season, how many will we see ever play again?
Oh, my God, John, you're the best. That's the question that I was actually going to pose to you once all the questions were over. Oh. Gotta love John.
Well, okay. He's made you pretty redundant.
That's okay. We all knew that. We all knew I was pretty redundant. Was the question who would we want to see or who will we? Because they're probably different.
I mean, I think who will we was the question. I'm happy I'm seeing any of these players again. That's my answer to the second question.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Like,
I guess
okay, you know, oh, perfect end to their story. Oh, like, it's over for, I don't care. Bring them back for Legends season 50, season 60. There's not one person I would say no to of this cast.
One of the consistent takes I have had since my time being a Survivor podcaster is that I actually really like returnee seasons. I'm actually not someone who's like, oh my God, like, no, we don't, we need to wait longer for returnees. Like, no, like, I like the shorthand. I like knowing, I love diving into people's history and their, like, you know, how, what motivates them and how they've changed. I love it. I'm happy to watch these people again. I've always said that if Sandra was on every third season, just was like part of her contract, I would never complain once. So that being said, the people that I want to see the most again is apart from the legends and stuff, the people who I want to see again is I want to see Sophie again.
Yeah.
I really want to see her again, and I really want to see Adam again. They're the two that I'm the most keen to see.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of Adam, I was actually just thinking the other night how appreciative I am to have had him there as our avatar. Like, even in little things like when Ethan is talking about Stand Up to Cancer and his involvement with that charity, and it flashes to Adam, like, it, obviously that's a really big connection, but just like to have Adam there, even in the Ponderosa videos, to have him standing there as Legends retire, and he's not, I don't think Adam's retiring, but to have him there for that moment, like, I felt like he represented us throughout the season, and at any moment, even in little flashes to him when people were talking and you knew the relevance, even when Tony is saying, Adam, you're going to love this, I made a spy nest, he was there. He was our avatar. Yeah. Like, he was the viewer on screen, as he said, sucked into his TV, and I appreciated it the whole time.
And look, obviously I love that because people kind of put me in that role. Like, there were times
I put you in that position.
Yeah. Well, even on the island, there were times when Jonathan was like, Nick, has this ever happened before? And I was like, oh my God, don't fact check with me. I don't want people to know that I know the answer to this incredibly niche, awkward thing. So yeah, Adam, definitely. People who I think we will, I do think we will see the number one person I think that will come back is Tony.
You think he'll come back? Rob asked him if he would come back, and I can't remember it because it's so much content down in my brain. It's like leaking out of my ears, all the content.
I think you would have remembered it if he said no. So I don't know. I feel like
I failed you all.
I tweeted this that like and I was sitting there, I was thinking it's so perfect to me that our two-time players are a king and a queen who themselves have a storied history, right? Yet neither of them have ever been involved in the other one's coronation, right? And it just makes me feel that, like, is there one more go of this? And I saw someone comment underneath, and I would love to credit you, but I got it from a few people, so apologies, that someone said, what if there was a season where it was a female tribe led by Sandra and a male tribe led by Tony, and they were all returnees, but it was like the king and queen's army kind of thing, and it was like some battle royale.
They better change the game a lot before that happens to make it evenly weighted to the genders.
Yeah, but just like, could you imagine, but if it was like some sort of thing, not where they're mentors like Island of the Idols, but where like they're in it, but like they get to make the decisions on behalf of the tribe. I don't know. It sounds like not like actual Survivor, but it just sounds like some geeky little dream I have where like the players that I know and love are chess pieces and the two players are Sandra and Tony.
Survivor chess. Yes, they all get roles as well.
How good would
that be? How much would it suck to be like, you're a pawn? Lions and hyenas, like, no, we've literally labeled you a pawn.
Yeah, oh my God, that would be the best.
People would have a lot to prove. Like, we saw people in a winner season being like, I have a lot to prove. Imagine being a returnee that's literally labeled a pawn.
Last time I was a pawn.
Yeah, exactly. You got to work your way through the board. I like it. There's so many people that I would see them all again. My concern, like, so a lot of people have claimed that they're retiring through this. Parvati, Ethan, Robin Amber, Sarah, Sandra also did say she was retiring. But I honestly think, like, who knows with Sandra when they give her the call. I'm not 100% told she wouldn't come back. Probably for any of these people, I think, like, maybe if the time is right, you never know. The person who made me cry a little in my watching of all of the extra content, and I had to pause to cry, which I did not have time for, was Jeremy. Like, Jeremy said that he was done, and I was like, I don't get it, because you first played 11 seasons ago. Like, you can definitely play again. Like, I didn't get that, and I hope.
Oh my God, Shannon, playing Survivor takes such a toll on your life, and I'm not talking about the mental toll, the emotional toll, the physical toll. I'm like, just the sheer time it's taken. It was a year of my life. Like, I got the call at the beginning of May to play, and now, like, you know, Australian Survivor wrapped up, like, say, a month ago, whatever it was, 2 months ago. Like, that was like 10, 11 months of just pure Survivor derailing my life in some capacity or the other. These people would have got the call in like January and then played in May, and we're now in May and it's just finished. Like, that is an over a year of their life.
But taken. We see people come back tons of time, like, you know, like,
I know, but when you've got four kids, like, oh yeah, my God.
I mean, okay,
like,
fine, I get it on a personal level. I get why. That's not the right verbiage. What I should have said was, it shocked me the most. I didn't see him as a retiring player because he's a new age player. He played for the first time in season 29. Like, for Parvati and Ethan and Robin Amber and Sandra to say that they're retiring, like, I get that, because it felt like this was like a curtain call on like a decades long history with the show. Whereas like, yeah, with Jeremy, I feel like if he played for the first time in season 7, he'd be a 5-time player, but he played for the first time in season 29. So he's done. Like, I feel a bit robbed as a fan. I totally get it for him as a person. And I just, it surprised me to hear it from him. We also heard it from Sarah. And I think I actually really don't get it from her, because I feel like she could win again. He's really good. Jeremy is also someone, like, all of these players are winners, could probably prove it again. It would be an uphill battle. But again, like, someone who played for the first time 12 seasons ago, this thing is going to go on for our lifetimes. Like, you're telling me that you don't want to come back in 10 years. Kids are a little bit older. Make some money. You're a legend. You're an instant invite back. Like, why not?
Yeah.
And I mean, you just illustrated why not. But, like, also, do it.
I also can't talk. I said to you that I wasn't going to play and that I had no intention of playing. And then I played again when I got the call. And,
so
like,
this is all meaningless.
So it's all meaningless, and you just never know. But like, for someone like Sarah, I'm not interested in seeing her again. Not because I don't think she's great, and not because I don't think that like she would be good TV, but like, when you wrap up your story so beautifully with that moment with Tony and the symmetry of what's happened with them, like, it's just not right. It's just not right. Fair enough.
I mean, you know, your mileage may vary on some of these players. They're not all the same. Sarah would be towards the bottom of who I would be willing to see again, but I think they've all delivered as characters. I think for a legend season, they could all, you know, get a call in various ways or for whatever theme. So
I feel like the people who are most keen would be most keen to come back
are the
your Wendells, yes. Wendells, your Adams, your Michelles, and outside of that, I can't
Nick
think of
would,
anyone.
Nick would be.
Oh, sorry, Nick. Sorry, yeah, Nick. Outside of those four, I can't see anyone like clamoring to come back. Someone who I do think will and would come back and should is Tyson, just because, like, you know,
he seemed to be kind of like, when he was saying like, now I'm a dad, he seemed to be like kind of passing the baton of his own story. But I also think like, for Tyson, like, like, come back, like, again, like, win for him, like, could win for us, because he's a great character. Like, that's how I feel about a lot of these people.
The thing, I just want to watch Parvati again. That's really all I want.
Oh, it broke my heart every single time they were saying they were retiring. Like, it was beautiful. and I got it from many of them. But it's sad. Like, it's a sad conclusion. Like, it's a happy conclusion, but it's sad to conclude at all.
While I love returning seasons, I think what we need now in terms of returning seasons is we need no more returning seasons that have, like, multiple time players. I think what we need now is a second chance. And I don't think we need that. Like I said, I love returning seasons, but like if we're going to do another returnee, we'll do second chance in a couple of seasons' time.
Yeah. Oh, I'm talking about them coming back for like season 60.
No, I get it.
But I agree. You know, some newbie seasons, a different themed, you know, like a second chance style season. Like that's where we should go from here. All above 18. Like I think we're getting a sense of what we want for the future of Survivor.
Well, I was talking to someone involved in Australian Survivor the other day and they were saying, you know, would you do it again? And I said, oh, I'm done. They're like, nah, I reckon you've got one more in you, like 10 years down the track. I said, why? So I can come back like fat, bold, like, you know, four kids, prove that my mind isn't as sharp as it used to be. Like, I think I'm good. So I feel like I get it for them.
Yeah, but it's sad. Anyway, that's what I got.
Good questions.
Yeah, that's we've spoken a lot. I don't want it to end because if it ends, then we're on the other side of this. Then I'm done. You know, this is my 48th Survivor podcast about these two seasons this year.
Well, Shannon, can I put out a suggestion? I would love to do some off season content. I'm sure there's plenty of stuff we could get into.
Yeah, so we'll do it.
You don't have to convince me. No, I know. Like we'll do something. Like I would love to chat. On a more kind of granular level about like a specific topic. If anyone's got any ideas, obviously,
hit us up. Also you'll be telling us obviously the problems with the chizzy. Those two things are what will flood my mentions.
Yeah. Let's do a whole podcast. It would just be myself and your brother. You're not actually involved.
right. That.
Or like you're there, but like you're on mute. So you have to listen.
I hate that.
And we'll just talk about the chizzy. We'll do a chizzy pod.
Oof. Okay.
The chiz cast.
Hard pass on that. We're going to want to do some stuff, but I just feel confused and emotional. As I said, just like sobbing after the finale that like this year has been more than ever for me and you went on Survivor. So I'm not even talking about it to you, but to everyone else, a lot of Survivor for me.
Yeah.
And then once we press pause on this conversation, that's done. So I really do want to thank everyone who has listened to any of the content. Talking Tribal, the X interviews, the deep dives, like the Australian Survivor coverage, Global, the voicemails, anything that I did. I've been lucky to do it on like a lot of different platforms. I've had a great time doing it. It's been overwhelming at times. The break, I feel different ways about. At times I've probably been like, ugh, I really would like a break right now, but it also is a scary thing. So yeah, the off season begins and it's a weird thing, but we're trudging through it.
Yeah, and look, you know, there's still plenty of chance to talk Survivor and find Survivor and stuff.
Oh, I'll
you know.
Talk Survivor.
Yeah.
Find a way.
Yeah, like just going, your Twitter is just hilarious. Like,
Thank you. What will my Twitter be? There's so many questions about what's to come. I don't know.
Your Twitter's going to be filled with Survivor TikToks that people are going to send you.
I'm going to have to go from Twitter to TikTok. I'm going to have to make the change in the off season. I don't want to do that.
Guys, DM me. Like I see my DMs quicker on Instagram, but DM me those TikToks. Okay. And I'll make sure Shannon sees them.
Do we have a hashtag for this podcast? I have hashtag debending, but maybe we should make it like a TikTok thing or like something. Survivor TikToks, TikTonies. What do we got? Like I'm trying to find a last minute pun. Where is Mike Bloom when you need him?
Tick Tonys is funny.
Nick Talks. That's what they should call them.
Oh, that's Nick. Good. Nick Talks. A TikTok about Nick. That's
Does that
good.
Have a C in the Nick?
No.
Okay. So sure. Nick. Okay. Sure. So that's the last minute pun that we came up with for the hashtag. Well
good job.
All right. Well, follow us at Shannon Gates at Nick Iadanza because whatever we're doing, we don't know what it is, but we'll definitely post about it and then you'll know. Keep subscribing as well as the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed and all of RHAP's content because that's how you'll see what we do. And without like a plan going forward, it's like more essential than ever that you're following what's going on.
Yes, and follow my Instagram because I've been getting really into like giving book suggestions, which has been a lot of fun, into engaging with people about like different books they can read, sharing my books on my Instagram TV. So I love that conversation as well, not just Survivor.
Yes, and I just have this thing that we're talking about now, Survivor. And it's going to end in 30 seconds. And I just, maybe you should end the podcast because I want to thank everyone. I want to thank you, Nick. Please don't make me, go out there to the off season, the off season starting in 30 seconds. Thank you so much. Thanks.
No, thank you, Shannon. Thank you for everything you've brought over the last year of Survivor. So thank you, and enjoy a well-earned break, but you will be back soon. So don't worry, your break won't be that long. I know that's terrifying for you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, just like
and
yeah.
I, once again, sorry for making you addicted to like being your drug dealer and giving you this insane drug, which has taken over the last year of your life.
Direct that apology to my loved ones, not to me. I'm having fun. Maybe you should call Peter and apologize to him. So,
Peter, I'll message him up.
No, I actually do want to thank Peter and all my loved ones who are so supportive through this. It's been a fun time covering Survivor 40 and Australian Survivor. It's been a crazy year, but thank you guys all for listening. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thank you again, Nick, for this podcast, for everything, for getting me even further into the weeds of what we're doing in possibly a negative way. The off season starts now. Good luck, everybody, jumping into the great unknown, and we will see you on the other side of that.
Bye. Bye.
Survivor.
21
South African, 12
ordinary Australian.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Million.
Shkel.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.